kids, it's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everyone? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Joining as usual, Cole, how are you doing?
I mean, I'm here, so I guess that's half the battle, right?
Yeah.
Although you're the one that feels decidedly more shitty this week than me.
Oh, I have such a brutal headache. It's been a stressful day. There's some life-changing news that I got today. Ashley and I had a nice long discussion earlier today. Our family is going to be growing.
Whoa.
We are taking in another cat.
Okay. Yes. How?
we've been discussing, we have Chip and Dale out back who are the strays that we've been taking care of. Dale's the mama with the kittens that we're trying to find homes for eventually.
Yeah.
Chip has gone missing the past couple of days.
Like I did see that on Facebook.
He usually shows up for breakfast. He hasn't shown up all week. We're worried about him. We don't know if maybe someone took him in or if something bad happened. We've asked a couple of the neighbors. No one has seen him or anything. And it got Ashley and I talking about Dale. And with winter coming up and these kittens being outside and in the cold, we've been talking. And I think we're going to take Dale in as well as the kittens until we find them homes and then just keep Dale as an indoor cat.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'm not particularly surprised.
I mean, we're like, you
when you named her, it was
him.
Done. Yeah. When you named her, it was done.
That's why I said on Facebook, like I didn't want to name the outdoor cats because you get attached and now Chip has been missing. And like, I'm legit worried about this cat. I miss him.
Yeah.
I miss going outside and seeing half his ear cut off and like old Papa over there.
Yeah, there's a little feral cat that runs around here, and I've tried for ages, even using a humane live trap to get her so that I can, you know, have her checked out and everything. I can't get her to save myself. She's been running around for about 2 years, and I know that even though I haven't named her anything, like if I just didn't see her at some point, I'd be upset. I'd be like, where the fuck did she go? But there was a stray dog that stayed here.
Before you get into the stray dog story, we got to give a shout out. Vertically Impaired just subbed for his 19th month.
That's a lot of mistakes.
That is a lot of mistakes. That is true. Tony, thank you for the sub. Thank you for your money. That will go towards refitty the shitty compitty. Eventually, we're getting close.
Yeah.
We're halfway there. We're almost halfway there. So all we have to do is continue the show for another 2 years and we'll have a computer.
So the question is, are you going to buy new components for your existing computer or are you going to build new?
I'm probably just going to build new.
Yeah?
Yeah.
See, I've been working on a build because I want to, after the holidays, I want to start like putting a little bit back each month. And just buying one piece here or there. And like to even get remotely close to anything that's usable at this point, my bill is already at like $1,400 and that doesn't even include a monitor or anything.
Oh my God.
It's just the build. But I did, like I went a little overboard in some places because I was trying to future-proof myself.
Yeah.
Because I do art digitally. When I'm not playing with ink and I play with digital ink. So when you're working on really large files, they eat up RAM. Everything you do with a graphics program is just like, give me that RAM, bitch. And I'm like, okay. And I currently have 8 gig in this PC. I had 8 in my old one. And there are still times where it's just like, more. And I'm like, but I'm not even working that large of a file. So I went ahead and like, on my wish list for my build. I put 32 gig of RAM with the option to go up to 64 on the hard drive. Or on the, not the hard drive, the motherboard. I went up to 64. But I also went in and added M.2 solid state drives. Because if you run out of RAM in a graphics program, what it does is click over to your hard drive and start using up some of what your hard drive has sitting around. So something like an M.2 in a solid, an M.2 is going to be a faster solid state drive than a SATA solid state drive. So
I don't know the difference. I'm a moron with computers.
Like an M.2 looks like a thumbstick. It's so weird to like watch those be installed. They just like click in, and I'm just sitting there going, it's just basically modified RAM. That's the whole process. I thought for sure I heard a car door. I'm going to be like hearing phantom car doors until they get here. But yeah, it just plugs in. It looks like a thumb drive. But they're really cool, and they're leaps and bounds faster than just a regular solid state drive. Which in this computer I have two solid states, and they're a big difference. Like when I run out of RAM, switching over to those is better than just switching over to a regular hard drive.
No.
So it only goes up with an M.2. So I was trying to like future proof myself and pay a little more to make sure that obviously graphics programs are just going to keep getting more and more intensive. And sometimes I work on prints that are large enough to go on a shower curtain or a king size blanket.
Jeez.
And if you're, you know, working at that size, you gotta have wiggle room in your RAM and your hard drive for it. So
I'm getting worried. OBS has given me red and orange lights, and I'm worried that the stream might be having issues.
Twitch has been fucky tonight.
Twitch has been fucky. What is going on, Twitch? Yeah,
she said it took him like 30 tries to get on and go live. I was like, yikes.
Damn. Well, we're back in the green for now, so.
Hanging on.
before things get too shitty, should we jump into the news and start with this show?
Go.
All right. The big news of the week. This is exciting for the both of us, I know. Fortnite season 10 ended with a literal bang as the world exploded into a black hole. Did you see that?
Who didn't? Even CNN was covering that shit.
No, but did you watch the video of what happened?
No, I saw like screenshots of the black hole, but I was good. I didn't need to be any more informed than that.
Someone uploaded like a 10-minute video of everything that happened. Of like all these missiles going and all these explosions and all this crazy shit going on. And then the world just imploded into a black hole. It was actually really cool to watch.
Wow.
Yeah, it was really impressive as a world ending event. It was really cool.
If there is any one thing that you have to give Fortnite credit for, it's their viral marketing.
Yeah.
They're damn good at it. They know what they're doing, and they do it very well.
Yeah, Carnage saying you could put in the Konami code, and it had a shmup minigame with it.
Did it really?
Yeah.
I'm a little sad I missed that. I had to play a shmup.
Unfortunately, the black hole is gone. It was only up for like a day or so of chaos as all the kids lost their goddamn minds.
There were like a million people on the stream watching a black hole.
Yeah, just waiting for something to happen. It was like a day and a half, something like that.
Still. It was like from the 14th to the 16th. But it was like the afternoon of the 14th or something like that. Yeah. And then the 16th is when they... something. I don't remember specifics. That's how much attention I paid, but...
Yeah. Chapter 2 launched. A whole bunch of new goodies in Chapter 2. They have a new island with 13 new locations. They have water gameplay with swimming, fishing, and motorboats. They have a bandaged bazooka and the ability to carry your teammate to safety, which is cool.
New. Yeah. I'm curious how these kind of elements will affect other Battle Royale games, because every time one of them comes on the scene with something new or different, the others scramble to find a way to make it work too. We saw it with Apex, with being able to respawn your teammates, and then all of a sudden Fortnite had the vans where you could respawn your teammates. So I'm curious to see, like, ooh, the stream died.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. Yep, your browser encountered an error while decoding the video. RIP.
I don't know. I'm still green on my end.
Huh.
Maybe something happened on your end. Haha, it's not me. Hooray. If anyone in chat can confirm that it is not me this time.
I don't know. I refreshed and it seems okay now.
Yay. It's not my fault.
It's just Twitch
in
general. But yeah, I'm curious to see how like that kind of stuff will span over, because I don't see the bandage gun making much of an effect in like Apex, because you can already heal with Lifeline. So I don't think that'll make a big deal. But the being able to carry your teammate to safety, that's kind of a changer.
Yeah.
So
a literal game changer.
Yeah, literal game changer. And I'm kind of curious how that will flow over into other battle royales.
Yeah.
If I can speak, that'd be nice.
that'd be cool.
Yeah.
It's cool to see Fortnite still changing, still evolving. It gets a lot of shit, but, you know, they're still working on the game and it's popular for a reason.
One of the things that I was most curious about was whether or not the, like when they launched into Chapter 2, were they going to let everybody's microtransactions carry over? They were like, clean slate, bitches, we got your money. Can't even play the old game anymore. You don't get to take your shit with you anymore.
That would be awful.
It would have been, but come on. At this point in time with game marketing, it should, would you have been surprised?
No.
Okay, me neither.
You got a point there.
Yeah. Like, there's nothing about that seems out of whack.
Very true. Oh, man. Some other news. A couple of games are leaving Game Pass at the end of the month. The Escapists, Thief of Thieves Season 1.
Oh, shit. I need to play that.
Grip and Darksiders 2 Definitive Edition.
I own that. But, I need to play Thief of Thieves.
Yeah, that one is going bye-bye. There was also a little kerfuffle for a day because listed on the page that shows the games going away was Doom, which they came out and said that one is staying.
Okay.
And Halo Wars.
Oh.
A first-party Microsoft game was listed as leaving soon. They came out and clarified, just like Doom, that no, it is not leaving. It was a mistake showing up. But it got a lot of people talking, like, can we see first-party Microsoft games leave Game Pass? We've seen some 360 arcade titles come back and go. But
that's like I said, that's different because Game Pass wasn't on the horizon. They couldn't have planned for that in any contract.
Yeah, that's a whole new world.
But,
Oh, and Carnage saying a second update, Darksiders 2 has also been removed from the leaving soon section, so that one might not be going either.
Oh.
Who fucking knows?
I wonder what the process for that is. Like, maybe there's just a big giant list and somebody made a typo, put something on the wrong line, and caused a whole, like, it's probably a spreadsheet. That's what people and businesses use, right?
Probably.
So probably somebody just, like, hit the wrong color on a spreadsheet or the wrong square and just fucked it all and caused all chaos and confusion. Like, I'm pretty sure it's probably far more like a mundane thing than anybody's expecting it to be.
Either that, or maybe the games were scheduled to leave, but they renewed their contracts.
Yeah.
Halo? I don't know there. But maybe.
I don't think Halo Wars is going to go anywhere. If I'm not mistaken, 343 does Halo Wars, didn't they? They did the first one. Who did the second one?
I don't remember.
But yeah, was it Halo Wars 2 or was it Halo Wars?
I think the original Definitive Edition.
Oh, okay. No, Bungie didn't do Halo Wars. They did Halo, but not Halo Wars.
Yes.
Yeah. Because Awesome Prime said Bungie. That's not correct. I remember specifically playing a fuck ton of Halo Wars, and it was not Bungie. But yeah, I don't. even if something happened and Halo Wars was pulled out, I would still be inclined to be like, that was a 360 game. It had a different contract. It is what it is. But they have said that anything new coming up and launching into Game Pass isn't going anywhere.
Yeah.
And they've stood by that so far. Game Pass is how old now?
2 years.
So, like that. I mean, we've literally not seen.
And Carnage anything. Pointed out it's Creative Assembly who developed Halo Wars. Okay. Too.
See, so again, it was another. I would be like, oh, Cuphead is in there, and then Cuphead is out, and everybody would be like, but it was Microsoft. Yeah, but maybe it was. Maybe they didn't have that kind of agreement, and it just is what it is.
I don't know, but it's not all games leaving Game Pass. We got a couple new additions this week with Panzer Dragoon Orta and Fallout New Vegas coming via backward compatibility. And then Felix the Reaper launched direct to Game Pass this week as well.
I love seeing indie games released straight to Game Pass.
I know, I love it.
It makes me so happy. It's, what was that one article? It was like, basically, it's just a marketing free-for-all if you join Game Pass.
I could see that, yeah.
They were like, that because of all the marketing that it gets by joining Game Pass, even people who don't have Game Pass are more inclined to see it and buy it. And when you have weeks where like 10 to 12 games are launching, that can make or break you.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, hell, look, next week, Modern Warfare is coming out and The Outer Worlds is coming out.
Mm-hmm.
Outer Worlds is on Game Pass.
It's not.
So which one is going to have my attention next week?
Yeah. Is it possible that both, depending on if we get Call of Duty for review.
I haven't heard anything, so I don't know if that's showing up this year or not.
But yeah.
Carnage, so many games. There are way too many games this year.
I specifically told Joe in September, I will be doing the Inktober Challenge. I will not be taking as many games. I have to have time to paint. I will be doing an 8x10 painting every single day. I need time. I did 4 Inktober paintings, and I haven't done shit else. Because even when I outwardly say I'm going to say no more, I still end up saying yes to 7.
Yes.
Because there are just so many that I start to feel like shit by the 15th no. And I don't have a choice but to say yes to something.
You do have a choice.
I do, but I don't.
And how many of them do I offer? And you're like, yes, please.
Look, it's not my fault that Games I Want also decided to come out. Like, what kind of idiot would have turned down Tropico and Frostpunk? Have you heard the way I talked about those this month? Well, I wasn't going to let those fly by.
True. We'll see if there's any
park, but it wasn't last night.
We'll see if there's any this week, but we're not at the reviews yet. There's still some more news. Riot Games has announced that League of Legends will be coming to mobile and finally to console.
That's crazy. I was actually curious if they were going to do mouse and keyboard support, but I've heard that it should just be console controllers. Controller. Hmm. Yeah, there's no mention of mouse and keyboard support. So I'm curious how that
is. Not many developers are making use of mouse and keyboard support. It's like there was a wave when it was announced, and then that's it.
I thought that Frostpunk was supposed to have mouse and keyboard support, but when I tried to use my mouse and keyboard, it didn't work.
Nothing.
So maybe I was crazy, or maybe I need new batteries. I don't know which.
little column B, you never know.
Probably, because these are, like, you know, when you buy the cheapy wireless mouse and keyboard, and then they have the cheapy batteries inside. Yeah. Those could have been on a shelf for a while, is all I'm saying.
Probably.
Like, I don't even know if this thing is supposed to have a light on it when it's on. Oh, if it wasn't dead, it is now, because apparently I left it on. Oh, shit.
Proud of you. Gee, why doesn't it work? Oh,
keyboard
Jesus.
Hasn't been off, though, so. No, it hasn't. Oh, boy, I'm good. Guess you I'm buying batteries next week.
Oh,
eventually,
God.
I'll get to use it to play The Sims.
No, you won't. You'll be too busy playing other shit.
Like during my 2-week vacation at the end of the year, that still somehow finds me reviewing at least one game.
Oh,
that's
God.
I'll be like, I played The Sims for 14 minutes. It was so good.
Once upon a dream.
I got to low create a Sim. Oh, I love that game.
Oh, God. Let's see. What other news do we have? Nicholas has announced that The Binding of Isaac Afterbirth Plus is finally hitting the Xbox One on October 24th.
Well, they have to do something good after that shit publicity they got not too long ago.
No, it's only a few years late, but it's nice that it's finally happening.
I don't understand what any developer's deal with that is, but that's, I guess, an argument for another day.
Yeah. At least it's happening.
I haven't played Afterbirth. I have Binding of Isaac, but I was basically like, I beat Mom and I'm good and I don't need to play it anymore. That's a perfectly fine ending for me. I have no questions about furthering this.
Carnage saying that he hopes they bring The End Is Nigh to Xbox as well. I hope so, too. There's so many games Nicholas could bring to Xbox, and I really wish they would.
Yeah.
But, oh well. The Fallout 76 Wastelanders expansion, the one with all the NPCs, has been delayed to Q1 2020.
Why? That game is such a dumpster fire. Oh my God.
Apparently it's turning itself around. So
no, it's not.
have you played it?
No, but I've seen it streamed a few times and it's like
Doc Havoc, which game is a dumpster fire?
Look, I purposely drew that out and said it properly. So don't make fun of me this time. I said dumpster fire.
Oh, Jesus. On the positive side, private servers are coming next week. So there's something good for Fallout 76 fans.
It should have launched with that.
Yeah,
I'm a firm believer that every game needs a PvE element. There are just people who don't want to get their shit wrecked every time. Sea of Thieves is on my shit list for this because I think Sea of Thieves is a blast. For all of the people who bitch that there's nothing to do, like I can totally get lost in Sea of Thieves for days and be fine with it. Just a moment. But yeah, I can get lost in that game for days. Just, I lose all interest the moment I start getting griefed.
Yeah.
And it's the biggest annoyance in the world. Ark was incredible, but I never once touched Ark on a public server. I just had no interest in that shit. Let me play that shit privately. Bring a friend in, 2 or 3 friends. Let us build up. Go look, there's enough of a headache fighting giant monsters running around or giant ghost ships or giant sharks. Or whatever or in the case of Fallout, the big fucking things that chase you that are horrible.
Mutants?
I don't know. Yes. Deathclaws? Is that what they're called? I watched David play Fallout. That's my extent with it. I haven't played it.
You should play it.
Yeah. Like, I like to watch it, but when it comes down to actually playing it, I'm like, I don't have time for this.
Fallout actually helped me get into first-person games.
Really?
Yeah.
See, I started off with first-person games. I like first-person better, and it took The Division to get me into third-person.
Hmm.
Like, I really struggled with The Division for about 3 months, and then just one day it clicked and I was okay. But that's one of the reasons that I haven't gone through the Gear series is because it's third-person, and I'm like,
that's it. Me and you were going through the Gear series.
I really need to. I really do. I have every one of them. I had Gears.
I feel like a dick. I've been meaning to play Gears 5 with Prime for a couple of days now, and every time just something comes up or I get busy. He's probably in chat like, you son of a bitch, you're offering to play with her and you still haven't played with me.
That's okay. I'm never gonna have time to play them anyway.
Prime saying Halo Reach got him into first person. Yeah, I could never play first person games because I just couldn't do twin stick aiming with first person games. I just couldn't do it. And then the VAT system in Fallout, where you just hit the button and it freezes the game and you can choose where you're shooting, that helped me get into first person games. And because I could play it slower and there, it wasn't such a run and gun game, I didn't get motion sick. So
you do still struggle with like first person shooters, like Call of Duty and stuff.
Yeah. I still get motion sick in some first person. I still get motion sick in some third person games. I got motion sick playing Disney Infinity. I shit you not. Disney Infinity of all games made me motion sick.
There were a couple of scenes in Sea of Solitude that just thinking back on them, I'm feeling a little squicky. they got me. But I don't generally suffer from motion sickness. Sea of Thieves, if I sit and just look at the water and with the up and down motion, nope.
Yeah.
But now, if I'm running around, I'll usually, if you play Sea of Thieves with me, 90% of the time you will find me on the bottom deck staring at the map because that's the safest place for me to be. Otherwise, you're going to hear me have to mute to go bleh. I know when I'm about to get sick like that. I'm just like, we better cut this cookie operation down. We ain't finishing this.
Oh, geez.
Just don't look at it and I'm fine. But if I sit and it sucks too because they added fishing and I want to sit on the deck and fish. But if the boat is moving, I'm not sitting on that deck and fishing. I do not care.
Carnage says, pro tip, never play Marathon Durandal on the 360, worst motion sickness game ever. That's the only game that slightly bothers me, and I don't get motion sick either. So there you go. Don't play Marathon on the 360, kids.
I still want to play Narcosis in VR just to see how long it would take for me to puke.
Yeah, VR is a trip, man.
Mm-hmm.
Playing some games in VR, Ashley taught me a trick that it helps if you have a fan blowing at you.
Yeah.
Because you have that sensation of movement.
I actually get carsick. And one of the things that I will do when I'm carsick is just stick 3 fingers out of the window. I don't know why, but that feeling, that breeze come across my fingers, it makes all the difference.
Doc Havoc, VR would be great if you could wear your fucking glasses with the headset. Yeah.
I didn't think of that. I do wear glasses. I'd be screwed.
Yeah.
I can't see shit.
They said that the PSVR would work fine with people with glasses. The first PSVR set that we had got scratched because Ashley's sister wears glasses and she tried it on and the glasses rubbing against the plastic lens of the PSVR. Yes, they used plastic lenses. It just scratched.
Yeah, that would do it.
Yeah.
I didn't even think of that.
Yep, they did not use glass lenses for the PSVR.
Are you surprised?
Not at all. Last bit of news I have is that the Nintendo Switch has sold over 15 million units in North America alone.
Wow.
Yeah.
And that now is... that...
Go ahead.
Go ahead. That is still on my kids' wish list. They straight up said... we would forgo any other extra presents to just have a Nintendo Switch. They want to play Super Mario World 2 that bad. That's all they care about. So I'm like, who am I to not oblige? They just made my Christmas shopping easy.
Well, now that the Switch Lite's only $199.
Yeah. Well,
it's more affordable than ever.
I've been mulling back and forth on that because that is what they want, but I cannot afford to buy 3 Switch Lights.
Yeah.
So the even affordable, that gets pricey, compared to buying a normal Switch and then, going through the motions with it and buying controllers and stuff and extra Joy-Cons.
Yeah, that makes sense. Anyway, any news you have?
I bet I closed my tab out. Call of Duty will not have a season pass this year, but they will have a battle pass system.
Oh, so, well, it's kind of a season pass-ish.
Well, Not necessarily, because the season pass for Call of Duty was always for the DLC. Yeah, the maps. But they also had the maps a la carte, and you could just buy the ones you want. Now they're not doing that either. So instead of buying them individually as packs or as the season pass, everybody gets all of the maps for free.
And now it's just going to be cosmetics?
Yes.
Allegedly just cosmetics.
You know, I will believe them after the review cycle comes and goes, because Activision is really dirty about saying, oh, we're not going to have loot boxes, or we're not going to have any kind of microtransactions, and nothing that you can unlock will make a difference in the game. That's not entirely true. In Black Ops 4, I definitely had a gun that made me a little more of a bitch than others. what I'm curious about, and I'm a little mad about this announcement, is that they said that they didn't want to do any cosmetics that weren't hyper-realistic, that they wanted to bring Modern Warfare to its gritty roots, which I can understand. But as a female player of Call of Duty who spent a long fucking time begging Activision and Infinity Ward and Treyarch for just one pink camo, and finally those being the popular camos, when they said there won't be any pink or unicorns or anything like that, they were very specifically pointing that at a certain subset of players.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. There's plenty of guys who run with those too.
Yeah, I would use a unicorn.
I did use the unicorn in Black Ops 4, and I fucking loved it. I taught myself to adjust to using an SMG just so I could use the unicorn.
Jeez.
But it did kind of feel a little bit like it was like a poke, and I'm about half expecting them to be like, oh, by the way, no female characters either. Although I don't know that they're quite willing to go that far back and piss people off that hard yet.
Yeah, you never know. It is Activision.
But there were not any female characters in the original Modern Warfare. And they keep talking, like, they're being very specific with their word choices and saying, you know, oh, there won't be any bright, you know, saturated colors, and like, they specifically said there won't be any pink or unicorn camos. And it's like, you had a lot of blue bright camos too. You had the camos that were animated. It's a little odd to specifically focus on saying the pink ones won't be there.
Yeah.
Besides that, all the new maps and modes. This one I'm a little iffy on, and I don't know the specifics of how it will work, because it does say post-launch multiplayer maps and modes will be simultaneous on all platforms.
Okay.
But then they've also said that the survival mode won't be on Xbox for a year.
Yeah, they came out and said that is the only mode and the only thing that is going to be a timed exclusive, and everything else is going to be launching at the same time on everything because of that one exclusive thing for the full year.
That does at least take the sting off a little if they've learned that that's not a cool thing to do.
I'm sick of exclusive shit in general. Like, oh my God, Sony pisses me off so much anymore with the shit that they do. I don't know. That's a topic for another day.
Yeah, that's a loaded one that I could bitch about for a while. But at least as far as Call of Duty goes, with the new Battle Pass system, they're saying that all of the weapons can be unlocked through gameplay. One other thing that they did finally say is going to happen that is long overdue is that the COD points that you normally purchase as a microtransaction will now be available to be earned in game.
Mm.
So there's not a lot of detail, at least from their press release, as far as like how they're going to, like make use of that. But if they're also hollering, hey, we're not going to have any of the non-realistic camos, if they're digging their heels in there, what the fuck are they going to sell in the battle pass?
They're going to go back on their word. They're going to have goofy shit.
That's
the only
imagine.
Thing they could have. There's only gritty, realistic shit you could release. They're going to have to go with crazy colors and crazy schemes and animated stuff and whatever else. They're going to have to. There's no way around it. There's just not enough content to sustain the game for a year if you're just going standard realistic gear.
You can only have so many digital camos.
Yeah.
Before you have to introduce pink.
Yeah. Oh, well. Are you ready to dive into reviews?
Yeah, let's do this.
All right. First game to talk about tonight is called Ghostbusters, the Video Game Remastered, developed by Saber Interactive, published by Mad Dog Games, released October 4th on Xbox One, Switch, and PS4 for $29.99. The beloved and critically acclaimed Ghostbusters video game is back. Strap on your Proton Pack once again and join the Ghostbusters on the adventure with voice and likenesses of the original crew as you battle to save New York. Cole, tell us about Ghostbusters, the Video Game Remastered.
Was this originally on 360?
Yes.
It looks like it. That sounds mean to start off with that, but I think that's the most important element of it. I have clearly been spoiled by the Spyro remaster. My requirements for what qualifies as a good remaster are very, very high these days.
Well, Spyro was more of a remake.
I know, but still, it set that bar. If you're going to send me some dudes who look like every kid in the 90s had the plastic Ghostbusters dolls, right?
Yeah.
That's what the characters look like in the remaster game. And on one hand, you're like, hey, I give them credit. They did what they could do. On the other, it's bringing some serious flashbacks of playing with those plastic dolls when I watch the cutscenes. However, it's not so much that it's a bad thing. It's just one of those things where it makes the game show its age, even though it's supposedly a remaster.
Yeah.
You just kind of feel like when you look at it, you're like, yeah, this was old. gameplay wise, it's actually really good. I was kind of surprised by how easy it was, even on the harder difficulty. Probably because I saw Shiz play it and like do horrible, and I was like, I didn't struggle quite that bad.
He sucks at everything.
It's true, but I did have a couple of issues that I didn't see anybody else have with the game. Early on in the tutorial level, the ghost that I was trying to bust kind of glitched out, and what it was telling me to do was shoot them with the idea is you shoot them with the proton pack until they are weak, and then you switch over to a capture stream, you slam them around a little bit, and then you dunk them down into the trap. It's fine. It's a perfectly suitable method for how to play the game. It fits in with the universe. It makes sense. Button mapping all makes sense. But during this tutorial sequence, the ghost just got stuck. And no matter what I did, I could slam it and it just never moved. It was stuck just flailing its arms and puking.
Nice.
And then no matter where I put a trap or anything, I couldn't move it into the trap. I probably spent 30 or 40 minutes just like thinking maybe I didn't know what I was doing. Maybe I didn't understand the tutorial. Excuse me, sir.
What was that?
The cat. Like I really thought maybe I had done something wrong. And then I just gave up. And I reset the checkpoint. I thought I will listen to the directions and I will pay attention to the subtitles. See if maybe I missed something. I didn't miss something. It just worked fine the second time.
Hmm.
And I could have forgave it if it had been the only time that happened. But there were several instances where it would tell me how to use a new item, and then the first time I'd use it, it just wouldn't work. And then, like, they would keep yelling at me the same line over and over, you know, slam it or capture it now, it's weak or whatever. And it was just on loop. And the only thing I could do was go back to the checkpoint and hit it again. It would work the second time, every time. But it happened every time I unlocked new equipment, because you do eventually get different streams to use. You start off with the proton stream, which, you know, makes sense. But you eventually unlock like a stasis stream or the slime stream. And every time I would have to learn how to use a new one, it would be like, yeah, fuck you, do it twice. Which is disappointed. I think with a remake, you probably should at least, or a remaster, you should at least try to smooth out some of those kind of bugs. I don't know if that was the thing that happened in the 360 version. I didn't play the 360 version.
I don't remember it happening in the 360 version, but it's been a while since I played it.
But it was definitely a struggle for me. That said, it's Ghostbusters. How can you not enjoy it?
Yeah.
It was so overwhelmingly goofy. And even though, like I said, it looked like plastic dolls, it was just a little too much face smoothing going on, especially for Dan Aykroyd. But it was just, even though it looked kind of silly and a little cartoonish, it was still a lot of fun to go into. And it just like brought back all these really cool memories, and like I was telling the kids, I was like, man, we need to watch Ghostbusters this weekend. We haven't watched Ghostbusters in a couple years. It's time. Which is, I think it's a good thing. That's the whole point of a movie tie-in game, is it wants to remind you to watch the movie.
Yeah.
So it did good in that regard. There are a ton of collectibles. However, you use a PKE device, and when it glows blue, it tells you exactly when you're close to a collectible. So if you miss them, that's on you, because the game literally says, hey, jackass, look here. there is a collectible, though. It's not so much something that you have to do to 100%. If you just want to enjoy the game and enjoy the story aspect of it. But if you're trying to get all the achievements, you have to take a 100% sample of every single ghost and like ectoplasm or slime or whatever they leave behind. That is incredibly daunting. I thought I was doing so good, and I looked and I'm like 18%, and I'm like, fuck's sakes.
Oh, geez.
Because sometimes it can be difficult, especially with some of the ghosts. The Stay Puffed Marshmallow Man is like throwing these burning marshmallows at you, and you're dangling off of a ceiling or off of a roof, and it's like, okay, now is not the time to try to take a sample for these guys. I'm just going to have to accept that I failed that. I'm sure there are people who can do it. Good on them. I'm not one of them. You do play as an original character. You don't play as the four main Ghostbusters. You're kind of supposed to be like a new recruit that they've brought in. You have no character customization whatsoever. It's just a silent white dude with brown hair. He's the most generic. I think they just like went to a Ghostbusters convention and took pictures of the crowd and then fed it into an algorithm and was like, make the most common appearing fan. And then that's our character, because that's basically what you get. And you have no say over anything with them. But at the same time, it's like, nah, I don't really care.
He's not the star of the show.
He's not the star of the show. The ghosts are. The ghost fights, especially the boss ones, were so well done. Like, in movies, it's easy to be like, okay, they're throwing this around, they're throwing that around, and You only have to worry about your characters not getting hit by a flying marshmallow covered car like once. In a game, though, that shit becomes repetitive.
No.
But they somehow managed to find a way to make every ghost boss battle feel like it was its own unique circumstance. I absolutely loved the librarian more than any of them because she surrounds herself with an orb of books. And so before you can even try to weaken her, you have to destroy the podiums with books on them to take down her shield first. And it just really forced you to like think about where you were in the room and how you were going to hit things and not get your face fucked off by flying angry books. It was so intense and stressful. But it was such a good fight. And then, like, after I beat it, I sat there and I was like, I fucking did it. I felt good. And I didn't expect that from a 2009 360 remaster. I was very impressed. It was a good fight.
So it sounds like the game overall is still as fun as it was back then. It's just not much of a remaster.
Right. It's like they put some extra pretty textures in there and was like, here we go. This is good.
Well, at least the game's available for people to get again. I think that's one positive because it is a solid game and it has the original Ghostbusters. And that's the last time that we'll ever have all of the original Ghostbusters together again.
Yeah, that was super cool that the voices were all. That's something that you pick up if it's not done right.
Yeah.
And so it was super cool to like hear all the voices. And I think that really helped with the nostalgia factor of it.
Yeah. So overall, $30. What do you think?
I give it a buy. Yeah, it has some issues. And I hope that they'll, you know, keep working on it, patch it, and maybe try to fix some of the shit that was messing up. And again, I play on an S. So maybe if you're playing on an X, you might not have the kind of problems I was. Who knows?
Yeah.
It's so hard at this point with all of the different variations of Xboxes to be like, oh yeah, this runs like shit on an S, but perfectly fine on an X. So it could have just been me. Could have just been that I'm on an S. But I do hope that they work out those little performance quirks and really polish it up because it is a lot of fun.
Nice. All right, well, next game to talk about is called Children of Morta, developed by Dead Mage, published by 11-Bit Studios. It released October 15th on Xbox One and PS4 for $21.99. Will release November 20th on the Switch. The Bergson family has guarded Mount Morta for generations, but now face their most dangerous trial. Corruption is spread, morphing the once peaceful mountain into a violent and monster-infested nightmare. Take part in their journey and experience what it means to be a family of heroes. Cole, tell us about Children of Morta.
So normally when I get on here and I talk about a roguelike, I talk about how they're light on story and that there's just not a lot there, but it's okay because you're just going in to murder things and you don't mind. Children of Morta says, hold my beer. Or maybe more aptly, hold my arrows. You do actually have a very poignant story for Children of Morta, and it's going to pull on your heartstrings. It's what it's made to do. The whole premise is that the Bergson's family home is built upon a corrupted shrine, and now the family members have to enter into the dungeon of the shrine and try to locate pieces of their goddess so that they can put her back together and she can stop all the corruption. Easy peasy. But that's not the end of the story. While that is the premise of it, more and more story elements are given to you as you go through the dungeons. In a lot of games, if you fail, then you don't get to progress. You don't get to know more about the story. If this was a standard issue roguelike, it'd be like, you died, haha, and tell you nothing else. And that's that. But Children of Morta instead will give you little slices of life for the family in between every attempt. Sometimes it will give you full-on exposition and tell you what's going on story-wise. other times it'll just let you see, like, oh, one of the children is you know, drawing in their book before the run. Or you might see the mother out feeding animals. It still gives you glimpses so that you attach yourself to this family. You want to see them do well. And then it hurts when they don't succeed. whether you succeed or not, if you go in, you go through a dungeon, you get to the boss, or if you go in and you die, either way, you get brought back to the family home and you get those moments. When you do go in, it's, you pick one of the family members. You start off with two that are available, and extra ones can be unlocked with progress. But you have to choose how you're going to approach the dungeon, because some of the characters are better close range. Some of them are better long range. Some of them have, different spells and abilities that can be unlocked than the others. Although it really does kind of like find ways to balance out. I preferred the ranged weapons most of the time, and yet it still felt like there were moments where I wasn't completely fucked if things got close to me. I could still get out of a pickle. That's important because even...
Pickle's on my lap right now.
Hi, Pickle.
Pickle.
Even though most roguelites are single player, one person goes in, does a dungeon, that's it. Child of Morta actually lets you co-op it if you choose to.
Nice.
I did not play co-op. I couldn't convince David to. He's really bad at roguelikes anyway, and I probably would have just wanted to murder him for slowing me down. Which made the balance and being able to play well with a ranged character even more important. And they did a really good job of doing that. Another thing, this is surprisingly accessible for a roguelike. I wouldn't say it's like the story goes on level of accessible, but you don't necessarily have to do well to proceed. Every time you go in, whether you fuck up or not, you're still going to earn coins that you can use for upgrades. You're still going to unlock abilities. You're going to earn skill points. So there's a benefit to just trying over and over again until you finally figure it out. However, the dungeons are procedurally generated. So they are different every time you go in. You're not wearing yourself down and feeling like you've seen this song and dance before every time you go.
Yeah.
Besides all of that, I know I bitch about pixel art a lot, but holy fuck, this is gorgeous.
See, pixels can look good.
Pixels can look good. But most times, pixel art is used as a way to like drone down the detail. Child of Morta uses it to crank up the details. And there were just times where I just wanted to sit and look at things because they were pretty. There's so much to take in. There's so much to just look at. Every element tells a story if you just sit and look for it. It's kind of like a pixelated Where's Waldo.
Nice.
But with a story that'll probably make you cry. Spoiler alert. But yeah, this is probably one of the best roguelites that I've had my hands on in a while.
Nice. So overall, $22. What do you say?
What an odd price point.
I know, $21.99. I was like, are they Square Enix now?
I'm assuming that has something to do with like currency exchange rates. But anyway, I definitely give it a bite. If you like roguelikes at all, this should absolutely be at the top of your wish list.
Awesome. I am excited for this one myself. This one's going on my wish list. So when I have a couple of bucks, I'm picking this one up.
nice. I would definitely recommend it.
Cool. Well, next game to talk about is called Stranded Sails, Explorers of the Cursed Islands, developed by Lemon Bomb Entertainment, published by Merge Games. It released October 17th on Xbox One, Switch, PS4, and PC for $24.99. Stranded Sails is an open-world farming adventure full of discoveries, quests, and puzzles. Along with your crew, you are shipwrecked on a mysterious archipelago. Now it's up to you to secure your survival and solve the mysteries deep in the heart of the islands and finally escape. Cole, this one sounds right up your alley.
Right. So, this is incredibly adorable. but it does very much have that Harvest Moon type of art style to it. What was the other one that we played that was the island not too long ago? Shoot. Anyway, this is basically from a art design standpoint, exactly what you would expect from this type of game. Maybe not necessarily so much as my time at Portia, but a very similar art style. Lots of super vibrant colors. It's very pretty, but it's got that low poly-ish aspect to it. It's not quite as low poly to where like it's void of detail, but the details are more scarce. You will play as, you get to name your character, you get to choose if it's male or female, but you'll play as a shipwrecked sailor who basically is it all falls on you to build up everything back, and you'll have to go and find your crew around the islands, and then as you do, they unlock abilities like cooking and farming and crafting. It's pretty much exactly what you expect. Like, it does not break the genre anyway whatsoever, but it's also not necessary for it to. It's enjoyable, but it's also incredibly sluggish and slow. That's one of those things with this genre of games that you can hit a wall with.
Yeah, it seems like a difficult balance to keep things moving along quickly in farming games.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you do it too fast, then the game is beat in a couple hours and you're done. But if you do it too slow, then everybody bitches that they had to wait for 300 days in real lifetime, like in Farm Together. The problem for me, though, is more like the character movement in the world feels incredibly stiff, and it's what slows everything down. You know, you can speed up like the farming and stuff. You can straight up just talk to the character and wait time out and just stand there as time passes and then be like, hooray, now I've got corn. Or you can go to bed and wake up and then be like, hooray, corn grew overnight. But the problem is that the world is so large, but it's so scarcely populated, and you move so slow that you're using up 90% of your stamina just trying to get to an area where you can actually find or do anything that you need to do. The stamina meter is deceptively large because it's at the top of the screen on your HUD. It's like a half circle, and you're like, man, look at all that stamina. It drains with every step. Everything you do drains that stamina. So then that means you have to eat or you have to sleep to get it back. I left the campsite with my stamina half full. I went straight to the ship to go to sleep, and I fell asleep outside of the ship. And I was like, this is going to be problematic. Like, I shouldn't have to stop and eat an ear of corn halfway between the ship and the campsite.
No.
And that kind of struggle of balancing everything that you needed to do with that stamina bar, like, to some extent, most games find a way to balance it out. And even though you feel like Stardew Valley was really bad for that, when I first started it, I felt like I was going to sleep at like 2 in the afternoon every day. But Stranded Sails kind of just sticks with that. It's like, nope, every sip costs you. Suck it up. If you're going on a trip, take a lot of food. And it just got extremely frustrating to carry on with that. That said, if you can tolerate the stamina mechanic, actually exploring and spending time with the farming and learning how to craft, it's all fun. It's one of those where you just like sit back, put your feet up and play, but it's hard to do that when you get started. It just takes a while to kick over.
Well, overall, $25. What do you say?
I give it a try. I give it a very recommended try. I think it could use a little more balance and just like, especially in the beginning with getting started, but it is fun. It is well done. It suits the genre. Doesn't break it, but it fits in with it. We obviously don't get Harvest Moon on Xbox.
No.
And this certainly fills that void if that's what you're looking for.
Awesome. Sounds good.
Yeah.
All right. Next game to talk about is called Pig Eat Ball, developed and published by Mommy's Best Games, released October 18th on Xbox One, Switch, and PS4 for $14.99. Insane action adventure about eating, getting fat, and barfing on things. Fight, eat, and solve your way through 200-plus action levels using amazing neo-arcade gameplay. Cole, what is Pig Eat Ball?
Gross.
All right. Pig Eat Ball is so gross. $15, what do you say?
It's just so gross. There's a volume slider for barfing. I had to turn it off. Like, I kept lowering it, going, nope. Still too much barf. Nope. Too much barf. I just couldn't do it. I thought I had a strong stomach. But a flying pig eating tennis balls and pearls and barfing and just, I was done. Story-wise, this game does have a story. It's not just puking tennis balls. It is just puking tennis balls. But there is a story to why you're puking the tennis balls. And that is because you play as Princess Bo. And she is a flying pig princess. And her father, the king, has run afoul of his finances. And his great big idea for how to save their floating in spaceship. The game is weird. The way that they're going to save their space station is he's going to marry her off in an arranged marriage. The way that he intends to marry her off is that he will have a myriad of suitors play these games for pearls, and whoever has the most pearls gets Princess Bo. In an act of defiant piggy feminism that I have to support, despite all the puking, Princess Bo says she will not be sold off to the highest bidder, and she goes to the games to try to win the pearls for her damn self. You go, girl. Why this devolves into her flying around and sucking up tennis balls and then barfing them out so she can get through the tiny rooms and then eating them again. I want to gag just saying that sentence. It's beyond me. But there are hundreds of levels.
You joke about the barfing, and like, there's hub areas that there's other people around, and if you barf on someone, they'll start barfing, and then it can cause a chain reaction of barfing, and it is incredible just to see all of these just sprays and spews of vomit just going around. It is beautiful.
It's definitely an acquired taste for humor.
You want to know what else is beautiful?
Latino
Heat just dropped 200 biddies.
What?
Drop it, bitch!
Thank you, George, and thank you, Latino Heat, for dropping 200 biddies. Thank you so much, Piggy Ball.
Enjoy your wet pancakes. So, for all of its tennis dark Mika, balls.
This sounds hilarious covered. And stupid, and I love it already.
I have never seen such a disgustingly weird premise carried out for so many levels. There are hundreds of levels. There is a boss that is a tiger head on a moth's body with tennis rackets for wings. It just gets weirder the more you play. I can appreciate the humor. The barf is beyond me. I mean, barf, fine. I was fine with the barf. It's when you have to eat the barfed up tennis balls again. And you eat three of them and it makes you barf yet again. And you can't finish out the level if you don't got all the damn tennis balls in your gullet. So you have to
suck it up. Ha, ha.
And I was just like, that was a bad pun. I'm not even acknowledging it. I was just like, man, this is a lot of puke. It's certainly a sense of humor that you have to have to enjoy it.
Yes.
If you can't get behind that kind of potty humor, then you might want to steer clear. But if you do and you can, it's incredibly well done. I will definitely give it that. It's surprisingly good looking for all of its weirdness. It animates well. It plays well. Even with all the puke on screen and everything that was going on, I never had any issues with lagginess. No problems as far as performance at all. Just puke.
Nice. The only question left is, it is $15. Is there $15 worth of puke in the game?
There's plenty of puke. I do give it a very recommended try. Like I said, there's so many levels, and it's all so absurd. Like, it just gets more and more absurd. But it is a sense of humor that not everybody's going to attach to.
I can agree there, yeah.
So that would be the only thing that stopped me from being like, oh yeah, I absolutely buy this. Because there are people who would be like, she told me to buy this and it's literally just vomit everywhere. And so, you know, go into it with your sense of humor, you know, on your mind.
Awesome. Sounds good.
Yeah.
All right. Next game is Ping Redux, developed and published by Nami Tentao, released October 16th on Xbox One for $4.99. Ping Redux has 100 plus levels, including 12 bosses that are inspired by classic games to help keep the gameplay varied. With bombs, lava, moving hazards, and other sorts of blocks to get in your way, do you think you can beat it? Checking this one out, Serlina, she's doing her second review for us.
Uh-oh.
So she's back.
We've got a returner.
We do. And this is what she's got to say. She says, hey, SML friends and fans. She thinks we have friends and fans. That's adorable. Serlina here, and this week I'm reviewing Ping Redux on the Xbox One, which is developed by Nami Tentao. Ping Redux is described as a ping pong puzzler, which was remade from Ping 1.5+. Having not played the ashes from which this game is risen from, I came into it with a fairly open mind, curiosity, and low expectations, which were promptly met and then exceeded. You play as a little white square that I assume is a spaceship. It's your job to get to the goal, which is a reddish circle that I'm going to call home base. The controls are pretty simple. You use the left thumbstick to aim and the A button to shoot. There's a really cool mechanic where if you hold the thumbstick in any direction, time slows down, releasing the thumbstick and time moves normally once again. This comes in handy in the tougher levels where you have to predict how things are going to move or if you need something to move so you can line up your shot. There are 12 worlds to explore, and each world has 8 levels and 1 boss level. Progression in the game was surprising. Yes, you can go through each level and defeat the boss. However, to unlock the next world, you have to earn enough gold stars to do it. How do you get the gold stars? By being awesome and completing the levels in as few bounces as possible, which you can see at the beginning of each level. Also, if you have enough gold stars, you can skip certain levels that are giving you problems because the next world is already unlocked. The game is nice like that. Where the game is not so nice is difficulty. The game gets really hard. I was ready to throw my controller at World 4. It's probably the only game I've played where having a healthy knowledge of angles, geometry, and the Pythagorean theorem is useful. You're going to have to bank your spaceship off of walls and other obstacles to get to home base. Since all I know about geometry is A2 plus B2 equals C2, I had issues.
Oh,
isn't
no.
that calculus?
It's algebra.
Algebra. That's what I meant. It's been too long since
I
high school.
I think what she's saying is she doesn't know anything.
Me neither. That being said, it's super rewarding to beat a level and get those gold stars. Boss levels are super fun. The first boss is a planet-sized spaceship that fights back. Another boss level is protecting your base from asteroids that explode and kill you if you're too close. Each boss level has different requirements, and I really love the variants. Graphically, it's definitely indie. I mean, you're a white square, a cube if you want to be technical. Each level has a different construction, and the backgrounds are really nice with crisp colors. I would love to see a mode where players can design their own levels a la Mario Maker. I'm sure the math nerds out there can come up with some truly diabolical levels. However, where the game truly shines is the music. I've already checked, and I don't see a soundtrack for Ping Redux. That needs to change because I would definitely buy it in a heartbeat. Each world has its own theme music, and it is catchy. I honestly sat for about 10 minutes sipping on a cup of tea just listening to the music repeat. The music was composed by Zona, and I don't know who that was, but they've got a SoundCloud, Bandcamp, and Twitter, and that's all I need to continue to gorge myself on that type of music. Is Ping Redux worth your time and money? You definitely want to buy it. It's worth it for the music alone, but the gameplay definitely has the ability to suck you in. Right now, Ping Redux is available on Xbox One and Steam for $4.99, although there is a Steam special promotion for 15% off, bringing the total to $4.24. Not sure how long that lasts, though, so mileage may vary, obviously. Keep in mind, I played this on Xbox, so I don't know how the game will handle on PC, but it does have full controller support. Expect to die many times, but you'll have a fantastic time doing so. Sounds good. It's a fun game. I had fun with it.
Good.
It is good stuff indeed. Also good, the next game to talk about. I'm assuming it's good because it's Artifacts.
You know.
Am I right?
You know. No spoilers or anything.
Next game to talk about is Queen's Quest IV Sacred Truce, developed by Brave Giant, published by Artifacts Mundi, released October 11th on Xbox One for $14.99. Restore peace in the realm of the Five Kingdoms. The realm of the Five Kingdoms faces a formidable challenge, and mysterious powers trying to destroy the relationship between humans and elves and start a conflict. Cole, what happens?
War.
All right.
No.
$15, what do you say?
That's if you don't manage to stop shit. let's dive a little more into it before I just say, hey, this is an Artifacts Mundi game, you should buy it, and I don't know why you wouldn't. There are some changes in this game compared to most of the others. We all know that my love of Artifacts Mundi fandom is primarily rooted in the fact that all their games have female protagonists. We have occasionally, I think twice, seen a male protagonist.
Not often, but every now and then.
It does happen, but it's been a very small number. But Queen's Quest, despite the name being Queen's Quest, sees you playing as a male peacekeeper. I was very surprised. As soon as he opened his mouth, I was like, the fuck is this?
Maybe it's a different kind of queen. I'm not going to judge lifestyles.
Maybe, but I mean, you're not playing as the queen anyway. You're playing as a peacekeeper. The whole point of it being that there is a sacred truce, ta-da, between humans and elves. And it appears as though this truce has been broken. And it is up to you as a peacekeeper to stay on everybody's good side, not get dead, and solve all the puzzles. Very Artifacts Mundi beyond that point. Yeah, it's got a dude instead of a female for the protagonist, but everything you do as far as like playing and solving puzzles, it's cut and dry Artifacts Mundi. I will say that this one, given that it was developed by a different studio, I can't remember it.
Brave Giant.
Brave Giant. They've done some other ones before. And there's, for some particular reason, they tend to crank up the hidden object side of hidden object puzzle and slack more on the puzzle element. So if you find yourself getting frustrated with the puzzles and you just want to do more clicky, clicky, pointy, pointy, find hidden things, this is definitely more up your alley as far as these Artifacts Mondays goes, because it does not have quite the level of puzzle element that the other games have. That's not a bad thing. It's just a different way of approaching it. And sometimes I'm all for that. Because you can play a lot of these in the puzzles. You tend to run into the issue of puzzles being redundant. And also, some of them are exceptionally difficult. I hate the ones where you have like three circles and are surrounded with balls and you've got to move certain colored balls to certain circles.
Oh, yeah.
I hate those. Those are always my worst ones. They take me for fucking ever. Aki says, how are the faces? Are they still weird? The animation in this one, they have not tried to take it to the like 3D animation element. It's very 2D, flat. And so the facial animation is not as severely awkward as some of the other ones because they've kept it more simple. Some points there's dialogue and like nobody's face moves at all. So you're like, yeah, that's fine. I think I kind of prefer when they do keep it more 2D and simplistic. If for anything else, just because it doesn't look awkward and out of place and forced. Which is the nature. A lot of these games start off as mobile and were ported to PC and Xbox from there.
Yeah.
And they have a lot of them. So, I mean, I'm sure the faces and the ones that have the 3D elements look fine when you're on a mobile device. And it's when you stretch it up to like a 55-inch TV that you're like, wow. but it's far better in Queen's Quest, given that it's just a flat 2D. And so it's not an issue. Like I said, I definitely enjoyed that there was more hidden object. That's what I come to Artifacts Mondays for. I just want to point and click and find shit. I did find that Queen's Quest Sacred Truce kind of struggles in... it's actually not a problem we've had in a long time in an Artifacts Mondays game, but occasionally there are items that are described with names that I'm not familiar with.
Yeah, I hate when that happens.
And it's just a lost in translation thing. And usually I just have to Google it. you can play the game casual and just click mindlessly if you want to. But if you are trying to play it on expert and you don't want to overclick, then just Google it. There was one point I had to ask David. I was like, the fuck is this kind of saw? And so then like, I think it was the Jack plane.
A jigsaw?
Like, no, and a jigsaw. I know what a jigsaw is.
I don't know. It's a J and a saw.
But no, it's one of the hand saws where it's got the two handles on each side and the small blade in the middle. And then you like run it back and forth.
Like a lumberjack saw.
Not that big though. It's small. One person can use it.
Oh.
I cannot remember the proper name for it. But the jack plane is another instance. Because I know it as just a planer. And so then when it said jack plane, I was like, is that different? Is that just a planer? I don't know. I was fortunate that one, I was actually just a planer. But there were instances where I had to like ask David and be like, the fuck is this? But as soon as he explained it, I knew what it was and I found it instantly. So either have somebody around that can tell you what the fuck that shit is.
Or have Google on standby.
Or have Google on standby because you're going to get confused. I guess if there's anything to get confused by, hand saws is a pretty suitable one. At least you can explain away that despite my carpentry skills, I am not familiar in every type of hand saw.
Oh, geez. So minor gripes aside, $15 on Queen's Quest 4. What are you thinking?
It's good old fashioned Artifacts Monday, and it feels to have good to have another one. So yeah, buy it.
That
we
works.
All knew it was coming. We all knew I was happy. Ain't nobody fucking surprised.
Not at all. But next game to talk about is called, I think it's Kine. Do they say it in the game?
They don't.
So, okay, I'm going with Kine then. K-I-N-E. It could be like Kine, maybe. Kine. Kine.
There's no accent or anything on it, so I was calling it Kine.
Yeah, so Kine, developed by Gwen Frey, published by Chump Squad, released October 17th on Xbox One, Switch, PS4, and the Epic Game Store for $19.99. Kine is a 3D puzzle game about three whimsical machines that aspire to be musicians. Embark across theatrically rendered cityscape by solving increasingly difficult 3D puzzles. Guide Euler, Quat, and Rue as they struggle to form a band and find their big break. Cole, what is Kine?
This game is deceptively difficult. Every single level of Kine sees you trying to move one of these musical instruments around. And you look at these puzzles and you're like, well, fucking duh. You know how you need to get to the end. But then you start trying to do it, and the game just laughs at you for being a dumbass thinking that you could do it. Because it's never as easy as it seems. And you could probably say that about most puzzle games. But Kine somehow manages to crank it to 11. You play as a drum, a trombone, and an accordion. And they are basically trying to get across the city. There is an insanely in-depth story in this game about these instruments trying to learn how to work and work together. It is so incredibly impressive that this game was made by a single woman. She killed it. She did a damn good job. Awesome says it's Kine. Kine? I don't know. I think
I'm,
Awesome's
I'm sticking
lying
with Kine.
Yep. Awesome's lying at me. But I'm going to pronounce
maybe,
it wrong anyway.
Maybe Kine, if Eternal Kine. Pronounced.
That is how I said Kine.
Kine.
But, you know, the game was made single-handedly by one female developer. She absolutely smashed it. Every instance of the game is so thought out. All of the puzzles really force you to slow down and think not just about how you're going to solve them, but how they fit into the story. There are main story missions that you'll want to get through, but you can also unlock side stories. And this is where the game shines. One of the best ones is that there's a side story where two of the instruments are talking about how they got an office job and were pushing paper for this office job. And you don't need captions, goddammit. Not that bad. But they were talking about pushing papers for this office job. And you actually do 30 puzzles because they talk about doing it for a month. And there are 30 puzzles where you are literally getting them in a position to where they push over paper. It's so brought together so that every little thing that you do builds up the story more. It's really well thought out. And I was just so lost. Just every time I would unlock a side story, I was like, excuse me, I've got to go do that now. Because I wanted to know more. And you don't think that you're going to like attach to musical instruments in a story game like this, you know?
No.
You're like, I'm going to go in, I'm going to blow through some puzzles, I'm going to call it a day. But then you don't, because it's so in depth. I wish I had wrote down how many actual levels there were overall. I feel bad I didn't write that down. There's so many though. And you will get stuck. Moving around in the worlds fairly simple on paper. You have the level is laid out with a series of boxes. It's kind of supposed to represent rooftops in some instances. In others, it's just like floor tiles or whatever. And you have different ways of moving the characters around within those squares. So the drum, for example, has two bars coming off on either side with a symbol on them. You need to, if you move the drum vertically so that it's pointing up and down, you can then slide. So like one of the symbols is on the ground, one's up in the air, and you can slide the drum on that bar one way or the other to affect which way it's going to tip when you move it again. So if it's standing vertically and you press up, it will roll up, but it will also fall down so that it's horizontal. And then you'll need to tip it back up to make it flip over again.
Interesting.
But where, if you do it in such a way that, say, the drum lands and he doesn't land on a floor tile or there's a hole under him, then you have to start over. You can't, he will fall. So you, even though he's like attached to those symbols, he can't just dangle over anything. You can't use them as like an easy out. He has to always land on a square. Same for the piano, even though she's able to flip over and go from vertical to horizontal, if she lands in such a way that the actual accordion piano part is over a hole, you've done it wrong. Do it again. It's really challenging. There are certainly some that made me want to bash my head in. I got to a point where I was like, I have to look at something other than these squares. I'm getting nowhere. Because you think there's no way that it could be that hard to just move a couple instruments around. But it is. It really is.
Dark Mika, we should do a stream, 1,000 biddies, and we'll play something on stream for an hour. Just keep going till everyone runs out of biddies. That would be really quick.
Yeah. We've never gotten 1,000 biddies.
God. Well, I think anyway, we got 1,000 once.
Did we?
I think so.
Oh, what do I know?
My friend Chris came in and dropped a buttload the one time. But a kind being $20, what do you think of it?
I definitely give it a buy it. It's so well done. And I definitely did not expect that it was going to be that well done. I was really impressed. There's certainly plenty of levels to justify it, too.
You want to know why it's so good?
Why?
Because Gwen Frey, the developer, was co-creator of The Flame and the Flood.
That explains so much.
See, that's why I knew you would like this one.
I did not know that she was... Man, The Flame and the Flood is one of my most favorite games ever.
Yep, there you go.
But, that makes so much sense.
Next game to talk about is called Stella, developed and published by Skybox Labs, released October 17th on Xbox One for $19.99. Stella is a cinematic atmospheric platformer about a young woman witnessing the final days of a mysterious ancient world. Cole, what is Stella?
An absolutely stunning 2D platformer. If there is a single game that I just had to say made me go, wow, from appearances alone this week, it's Stella.
Mm.
Absolutely. Just every moment is visually striking. Gameplay wise, it is a 2D platformer, but it's along the same vein of games like Limbo, where you're side-scrolling. In this case, you play as a woman. I would assume her name is Stella. But there is no dialogue or text or anything whatsoever in the game. So if that's actually her name, I don't know. If that's her name, if that's whatever led to this dystopia, who knows? It's all up to you. But she wakes up in a cave. She's all clothed in white. I know everybody's going to get a tickle out of that. And she leaves it only to find that the world is just absolutely ravaged in horrible dystopia. You know, the more I think about it, the more I think about how some of the elements and the enemies you come across are kind of biblical. Like you come across swarms of giant beetles and they will kill you if they get you. And then there is another sequence where you are in a forest and you are trying to be stealthy and not be seen by these like horrible, creepy Slenderman like creatures. And then there is another sequence where you are running across battlefields with just you literally hear like a whoop, and then there's a wave of flaming arrows go up in the sky. And you have just a few seconds to get cover before they come back down on you. So yeah, the more I think about it, the more I'm like, that's fairly revelation-ish. But I guess because there is no dialogue or anything, you could kind of
open like, to interpretation.
Yeah, interpret the story however you deem. Gameplay is a little on the predictable side. Each sequence kind of like follows the same gameplay pattern. You'll run into an antagonistic presence that scares you. Then you run into a sequence where you solve a simple puzzle. And then after that, you solve a puzzle while being scared by the antagonistic presence. Every scene pretty much follows that same pattern. But for some reason, you still just feel the urge to keep running right and see what happens next. Nice. And I can appreciate that, even though it never tells you literally anything, that you still just want to keep going, you know? There's probably some kind of like commentary on human nature and the will to survive being inferred in there, but you just want to keep going despite it all. It almost kind of reminded me of Little Nightmares in a way, where you just wanted to keep reaching for something at the end, even if you didn't know what it was going to be.
Yeah. Well, overall, $20 on Stella. What do you think?
It's kind of hard to be like die hard by it because it's such a predictable gameplay loop. It doesn't really stand out gameplay wise in the genre. I think that there's some others that maybe play the game a little better, but from the visual aspect of it and from like the cinematography of it, I think people really should look or at least play and experience the game just to experience the kind of motion that it has. So I definitely give it a recommended try it, but I think the price can be a little high for the gameplay side of it.
Yeah, it is a gorgeous looking game though. I just looked up some screenshots of it.
And the screenshots doesn't do it justice. Like the way that the camera pans, if you look up the Dark Woods, then I definitely recommend watching at least somebody playing that sequence. Won't really give away any spoilers or anything because yeah, it's very early in the game. Not that there's any spoilers to give because it doesn't tell you anything. But I would definitely recommend watching either the Dark Woods sequence or the Flaming Arrows.
Will do. Yeah, I'm interested. There's a lot of games this week that I'm interested in that we only got one code for, and I'm so bummed about.
I'm sorry. I am the hoarder of the codes. Give me all the reviews.
It's all good. I knew you would enjoy it. So
it was.
All right. We got to get Dark Mika in here. So let's add her to the call.
Is it working?
There we go.
Oh, Jesus.
To answer your question, Aki, Stella is not hard.
Okay, you may... so there's no, like, one beat it in under a fucking hour, no deaths or any of that kind of stupid.
There actually are achievements for, but even still,
fucker.
It's more of a, there's an achievement for beating it in under 90 minutes and one for doing it with no deaths. They're separate achievements.
Okay, that makes it a little easier. I can maybe do that then.
But
like, I never got that one in Little Nightmares. I couldn't even come close to it. I kept dying, like, within the first, like, 10 minutes.
All the rest are just story-related. And as far as, like, the difficulty of it goes, none of the puzzles are overwhelmingly difficult. If you just think about them for 2 or 3 seconds at all, you're going to roll through it.
Yeah, I'm good at puzzles. I love puzzles.
It's more of like a timing thing, especially with the dark woods when you need to be stealthy because those things will see and hear you. But
and I'm the stealthiest one here, as you should know from Blackout Club. Come on now.
But it's also less like thoughtful stealth and more just time it to when they're not looking at you. So it's definitely very doable.
Okay. I have to pick that up because it did look interesting. I didn't even realize it was even remotely close to coming out. I just saw it a day or two ago. Someone happened to mention it. I was like, oh, that looks cool.
It has not gotten near enough marketing.
Yeah. But it's an indie game, so that doesn't really shock me.
Yeah, but usually even with indies, like, if you can get at least 800 or so gamer score out of it in one sitting, everybody's like, oh! This is somehow Stella has just completely flown under the radar.
Honestly, all they need to do is just get YouTube videos out and just push it on Twitter. And that's all the marketing most games actually honestly need. There is no need for fucking millions and millions of dollars to be spent on this shit.
Yeah. Well, you're interested in buying it.
That's all their marketing problems.
Mika, you're interested in buying it. I'm interested in buying it. So our show alone just got 2 sales.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll probably wait until it's on sale, but yeah.
I am best reviewer!
Yes, I am the cheapest bitch to walk the planet. Matter of fact, I'm about to buy 2 games because they're more than 50% off. Because I am a cheap bitch.
Which ones?
Rootbeer is my jam, said he downloaded 73 Apple Arcade games, and Stella is one of them.
Holy shit, that is a lot of Apple Arcade games.
I'm going to be getting the... what was it? Something Next Door, let me see. The World Next Door, which is a game I kept trying to get for review, but sadly, I didn't get to. It's 70% off on Steam right now. And Degrees of Separation, which I did review, but the code was only a temporary one for the Steam thing. So after the review was out, the game stopped working. So I'm going to buy it.
That's a bummer when that happens.
Yeah, that's the only one that's ever done that to me, but... I bought it and 100%ed it on the Xbox, and now I'm going to re-get it on Steam and 100%. I love that game.
That works. So,
yeah.
All right, well, you're here for a review. Are you ready to get to it?
Yeah, sure. Yeah,
all right.
We can do that.
Because the next game to talk about is Roman Rumble and Las Vegas Asterisks and Obelisks XXL2, developed by Awesome Studio, published by Microids. It got a physical release October 1st for Xbox One, Switch, and PS4 for $29.99. That is why we're taking another look at this one. More than 10 years following their last appearance on game consoles and PC, Asterisk, and I am so bad at saying Asterisk.
I can understand that. There's a reason why I'm not saying their fucking names.
Asterisk and Obelisk are back and in better shape than ever. Asterisk and Obelisk XXL2 is a superb blend of action and adventure for all ages, with a winning combination of comedy and brawling. Aki, tell us about the game.
Well, there's also an ending part to the name of that game. It's XXL2, which is how I call it, because fuck saying XXL2. Mission Las Vegas, which is a wordplay of Las Vegas. The entire game is filled with, I would like to call them nods, but they're more like taking a brick to the fucking face. They're so blatant. Half the levels are pretty much just Las Vegas casinos. renamed. Like, you have, I think it's called the WCW, which is the MGM. You got Caesar's Palace, which I think is just Caesar's Palace. The Sphinx, which would be the Luxor. And I think there's another one as well. And it's like, they're just very blatantly just casinos. It's fantastic. On top of that, as you play the titular characters, and I'm not going to say their names, and I don't know which one's which, to be honest. There's there's a little short guy, which I think is the ass one. And then there's
the ass one.
Yes, the ass one.
Asterix.
That one, yeah. And I think
Obelix
the
is the big
one,
dude.
Yeah, I think. Or are you telling me that's what they are?
I'm pretty sure that's what they are.
Okay. I was pretty sure that's what they were too, but I couldn't remember. The story being filled with comedy, I'm not entirely sure. I got real bored by the story real quick, so I kind of just started skipping all the cutscenes because I was like, I really don't care what you have to say. Because the gameplay is where this game is at. It is, the beat 'em up aspects are fantastic. The puzzling parts are fairly simple, and there's some very basic and sometimes exceptionally annoying platforming sections, but overall it's just a beat 'em up and it is amazing. I don't even particularly like beat 'em ups, but it was really fun, I have to admit. But along with some of the places being named just modifications for casinos, there's other bricks to the face. Like, there's an enemy in there that is dressed like Mario from Mario Sunshine. So he has the water pack on his back that shoots water. He's straight up just a...
Yeah, you could tell the game is an older one because of all the dated references in the game. So you could tell when the game originally came out, but I still think a lot of the nods hold up a bit.
I can't even call them nods. Like, there are Sonic enemies that use rings as fucking weapons, and they run around by zooming, and it makes the zooming noise. And when they attack you with the rings, it makes the fucking ring noise. There's enemies that have Rayman bodies. There's even, what would you call them? You know, trophies, more or less, that align some of the casinos that are Rayman's clothing with straw stuffed in them. I guess for every time that someone killed Rayman, they just took his outfit or something. I don't know. It's like, there's even an entire level that is just the Mario where it's a play. That Mario game, there's a whole section of the game that is made in that exact way, where you are platform. I hated that level, actually. But yeah, that is where some of the worst mechanics of the game showed up when it came to platforming. It took away your ability to move the camera, but it was still a 3D plane. And it wasn't behind you, it was off to the side, so it was doing the side-scrolling thing, like in a Mario game. I almost just tipped my water bottle over. Jesus Christ.
Proud of you.
Yeah, I caught it. but you're side-scrolling, except for it's still 3D. So you can jump too far forward and backwards and falling off the things. But since the camera won't fucking move, you don't see it until you suddenly go under what you were supposed to be jumping on. And then on top of that, there were also the Mario Sunshine Mario enemies that they shoot just a big stream of water at you that's constant for a few seconds, and it just knocks you around. Motherfuckers knocked me off that goddamn thing so many fucking times. And then you have to climb that bitch all over again. Oh my God, I was so angry. I screamed at it. I was so mad at that part. But nice. The camera, when it gets taken away from you, there's only two times that it really does. It's in that one specific level, and that was, again, to be a nod to the Mario, because it was side-scrolling at that point, which really sucked. And then also during boss fights, it focuses on the big boss, no matter how many little enemies are around you or anything. And you're on square platforms that you have to run around that have just drop-offs on the sides. So I fell off of that a few times. Wasn't fun. And it's all because the fucking camera was stuck aiming at the big boss instead of letting me see where I was going. The camera is 90% of the problems with the game, really.
Anytime it's a 3D platformer, that's kind of par for the course in 3D platformers.
Yeah, but it was good most of the time, but when it went bad, oh my god, did it shit the bed in the most foul, runny shit way. Jesus Christ. It was terrible. But overall, the game is real fun. The beat-em-up aspects are really cool. You gain Roman helmets as currency, which is really funny to me. Every time you beat up the Romans, you just get their helmets. with that, there are little singular caravans that you can find throughout the levels that sell you stuff, be it lives or shields, which just allow you to take more hits. But there's also little figurines you can buy, and you need to do that to collect all of them for an achievement. But you also have upgrades and combo upgrades. So the standard upgrades are like, oh, you get more health. Oh, you can send your dog to go bite someone in the ass or something. And the combo upgrades are for magic abilities, because the midget, the ass man, can get these little green potions of magic that supercharge him, make him run real quick. It zaps lightning, killing a bunch of enemies almost immediately after he picks it up. He attacks harder. And then you can buy these different combos that allow him to do weird fucking things. Like, he turns into a fucking tornado. Literally. And you can move that around the screen, and that just fucking wrecks all their shit. It is... I love that ability. Took me until damn near the end of the game to realize how to even use it. Oh my god, it's so perfect. Then I think there's also a giant storm one, which is, I guess, supposed to be stronger than that since it was the second one. And then there's one where he turns into a bunch of meteors that just keep dropping.
Oh, my lord.
Yeah, they wreck everyone's shit. It's fantastic. and the whole game is you're just going around saving the druids of your group, clan, whatever it is, and beating the shit out of Caesar's men until you make him fuck off home. That's really the long and the short of it. Its cameras occasionally shits the bed. The story wasn't particularly important to me. It was kind of boring for me personally. But the beat-em-up, and I hate beat-em-up, it was really, really fun.
Nice. So yeah. Overall, $30 on Roman Rumble in Las Vegas. What do you say?
I think it's worth it. I think the game took me around 20-ish hours to beat. Granted, that was doing absolutely everything there was to do in the game. And I bought all the abilities before I got the achievement for just having a shit ton of Roman helmets on me at the same time. So your mileage might vary. I think if they're getting a physical, I'm hoping that they've added some stuff into it and hopefully maybe fixed some of the camera issues. If they have, then, oh yeah, it's beyond.
Well, the physical is the same as the digital, so...
Ah,
it's just a physical release.
Okay, I thought yeah. Because I heard they were doing a remaster or something, too, so I figured
that's what this is.
Oh, that's what I was playing?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought that was the standard one.
No, the original game was like a PS2 GameCube game.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, there's a third game. The third game's getting remastered as well. I'm not sure when that's coming out, but should be soon.
Oh, I actually kind of want to play that now, too. Just beat 'em up was real fun in this, I have to say. I really enjoyed myself. Just knocking the shit out of these fuckers was fantastic.
Nice. Well, I am glad that you enjoyed it. We are going to move on. Do you have any final words?
Code Vein made me angry, and that's really all I have to say.
All right, and moving on, Tim Ekibis is here. Tim, how are you doing?
Hey, I'm good. I'm great. I'm wonderful.
Hi,
buddy,
Tim.
I'm talking to people on the internet. Hi, Michael. Hi, Joe. Yeah, my child is being appeased with videos and doesn't know who I'm talking to. He just probably thinks I'm crazy, but he has videos, so it doesn't matter.
I mean, you are crazy.
Yeah, it doesn't matter too much. He gave me some side eye, but now he's back to his business over there.
As long as you're not talking to him and interrupting his show, he's fine.
Yeah, hopefully, yeah.
Ugh. So you two have kids. You know what's going on. I'm just out. I'm in the dark here. I don't know what the hell's happening.
Just imagine if all your cats were like one being.
All 13
with all the
of
same
them.
Personalities all locked into one, too. Like, literally, the wants, the needs, the personalities, and the willingness to destroy shit.
Yes.
Yeah.
All put into a little humanoid form that's about 3 foot tall.
Yeah, and any one of them could take the wheel at any moment for any reason.
Sometimes more than one has the wheel, and then they still don't know where they're going.
That's when it's the worst.
Yeah.
Oh, my Lord. Yeah, it sounds like Pickle.
Yeah. But like seven of him stacked into
seven
one.
Pickles stacked on top
inside
of each other.
A trench coat.
Yes.
And they all want fish, but not the same kind of fish.
Yeah. Salmon for one, tuna for another.
Yes.
Guppy for another.
And somebody wants a mouse.
And one of them's allergic somehow.
Oh, Jesus.
True. That's parenthood.
Yep.
So Tim, how are things going aside from that?
Good. It was, we locked down his Halloween costume today. And I mean, really, that was the main thing that needed to be accomplished. And it's 4 o'clock and it's done. So I'm going to call it a successful day.
And what's the costume?
Well, I'm not going to say. It's hold it till the day.
It's a surprise for him?
No, he knows.
Oh,
he knows what it
All
is.
Right. Yes. So it's just a surprise for us.
I don't want a surprise. I finally got my Halloween wish this year. Every year since number 3 was born, I wanted the girls to do an Alice in Wonderland group costume.
Oh.
Number 3 obviously needs to be Alice. And I realize that joke is lost because I've never said my kid's name on air.
Yeah.
But number 3's name is Alice. So obviously she needs to be Alice.
I'm writing that down. I'm keeping track of everything.
And then number 1, she's tall and lanky and she's got long blonde hair. So she obviously needs to be the White Witch. And then number 2 is shorter with bright red hair. And so she obviously needs to be the Red Queen.
Mm. You thought this out.
And so this year, I got my wish, and that's their costumes.
Yeah, nice. I am very pleased with Dickie's choice of costume. It was, you know, one I might have tried to forcefully inflict on him, but I didn't get a chance before he had the willpower to choose his own costume. But I'm excited that he came to this conclusion on his own.
See, I always had a long list of like costumes I'd have if I had a boy, but I didn't, and I never will. Yeah. And so now, like, all those are lost, and I'm sad.
Just crossplay. That's all fine. All's fair in love and cosplay and costuming. Yeah.
I could totally see number 3 pulling off an Edward Scissorhands look.
Oh, jeez.
Like, she's going to burn the world down anyway. Might as well give her blades while she's at it. So, yeah, I could see that. You know, thing.
She's going to burn the world down.
That's her life goal. Nobody knows it but me, but it's her life goal.
It's a good goal to have.
When it happens,
the world will be surprised, but you won't be.
Yeah, I'll just be like, ah.
Yeah, I saw this coming.
I'm so proud. She's going to burn the world down and rule the ashes.
Better her than global warming, right?
She
Maybe
had a goal and she stuck
her
to it.
Global warming.
Oh, my Lord. Oh, my God. Well, we have 2 games we got to talk about with you, Tim. Are you ready to get to this?
Yeah, I'm ready to go.
All right. The first game to talk about is Travis Strikes Again, No More Heroes Complete Edition, developed by Grasshopper Manufacture, published by Marvelous and Exceed Games, released October 17th on PC and PS4 for $39.99. Travis Strikes Again, Beam Katana charged and ready. He's been sucked into the legendary Death Drive Mark II game console, where anyone who collects all the Death Balls has their wishes granted. Or do they? Tim, tell us about it.
Man, it is so hard. Well on a year now, I keep calling this game Travis Strikes Back, and that is not the name of the game at all. It's Travis Strikes Again. He's striking again, but not back at anything in particular. No more Heroes game in the year 2019, and it's not going to be the last one. Man, that's satisfying to say and think about. All right, so yeah, this game is not No More Heroes 3. That game is coming out next year. But yeah, Travis Strikes Back, or fucking goddamn it. Pack it up. Yeah, I thought I was going to make it way longer into the review before I did that.
Rip.
Yes. Travis Strikes Again is kind of a side story. It presents, or previewed almost as kind of like a mini game collection, but that is not accurate. The setup for this game is Bad Man, who is the father of Bad Girl, who you killed in the first No More Heroes, is sent to assassinate you by Dan Smith from Killer 7, which is a wild thing to say. The craziest thing is they didn't put that in the game to begin with. Like, they patched in that opening cutscene, like, at launch. So it was kind of a secret until the game was, like, out. This is when it came out on Switch, you know, back in January. This game has been out for not quite a year. That's wild unto itself. And I will say that that is not the end of the Pseudoverse crossovers, as other things or other characters and stuff from other Pseudo games pops up in this one, which is wild and crazy and weird. Batman goes to assassinate Travis Touchdown while Travis, I guess, is playing the... I think the way Travis has the Death Drive and Batman brings the first game to him. Like, you know, the Death Drive is this legendary 70s or 80s game console that was much rumored about what its purpose was. You know, it has this mythical air that it was created and lost, and you know, it was made by the government, and the system hooks into your nervous system, so when you die in the game, you die in real life.
That's like Polybius.
I guess. Yeah, so it has this, you know, kind of weird mystical air to it, you know, this legendary air, you know, what is this system, does it exist, and the games for it, which are the Death Balls, you know, they're only one of a kind. There's only one in existence. So Batman shows up and you hook up the Death Drive and you both get sucked into the Death Drive. And the progression of the game is that you will play through these Death Drive games. And it can be co-op. It can be co-op. The whole game is co-op. You can, you know, one player Travis, one player Batman, who's suddenly less down with killing you and more down with just hanging around with you and playing these games with you and being outside your trailer for whatever reason. And so the games play out mainly, it's kind of like an overhead beat 'em up, though not exclusively. So, you know, you kind of have this overhead perspective and you have Travis or your character running around and you'll have hordes of enemies popping up, which you will slash and fight and cut down with your beam saber. That's the general gist. You can jump, you have a light attack, you have a heavy attack, you can use your light attack while you're running, just continuously just whipping the blade around, which is fun.
Nice.
Of course, your blade will run low on charge, so you have to stop to recharge it, which in the Wii version, you did by jerking the Wiimote, basically. And you can do that in the PS4 version by shaking the controller.
Nice.
So they do retain that bit of tactile motion stuff. Or you can just wiggle the sticks. That doesn't, you know, whatever. You don't have to be a motion-wagging jackass from 10 years ago.
Oh, if only this was on Xbox One. Imagine what you could do with the Kinect.
Wow.
The what? That thing that's not packed into the system anymore?
So sad.
So, yeah, you'll go through these games, and each game kind of, you know, it has its own distinct, like, theme and, like, character that it's built around at the end. The first game is called Electric Thunder Tiger, and in the game is, the last boss of it is the eponymous Thunder Tiger at the end of it. And there, I said mostly overhead because there's a game later on that is side-scrolling, but still kind of retains those same beat-em-up mechanics except in a 2D plane. I think it's the second game is, it's overhead, but like it pulls way back. So you're like looking at a neighborhood, and it has a puzzle element to it where you're like flipping the streets around so you can make your way to a house. You're tracking down a serial killer in that one. So each game has its own distinct kind of flavor and feel and energy to it, which is cool. The worst thing is the first game I feel is the worst part of the whole game because it's just a long, tedious, like extra repetitive level. I feel like every stage after that kind of wraps up right about when it needs to, but the first level just goes like on and on where you're like going through these catwalks and there's electricity around, like electrical barriers, and it's just like, it just goes on. So it's a bit of a rough start. And it's also a bit of a rough start because when you start out, you don't have that many abilities. So along with your light and your heavy attack, you eventually pick up like these special moves, that work on cooldowns, and you can have four of them active at any time. And those work like, there's like stuns and projectiles and big sweeping attacks. There's one that's like a heal. So just different things to kit yourself out with. And you get more of those as you play through, and that makes things a lot more interesting when you have more of those to play around with. You have like a super meter that you can build up for a super special sword combo-y attack. One other detail. No. And that's the combat, and that's basically the gameplay of it. So you'll go through a death ball, you'll come out of the death ball, and then before you do the next game, you have to find it in the world. Which plays out as a little text adventure.
Interesting.
Yeah. And there's definitely some weird stuff there. And again, like the first one of those is very long and, you know, No More Heroes has never been shy about, breaking the fourth wall. So like some of the later ones are just like, oh, we're dragging down the game too much with all this narrative. People just want to play. Like, let's just get the, and it's just like, here's the death ball and go. Whereas the first one is kind of a slump. You're done? Do you need help? Okay. Just come over here if you need help, buddy. What?
Oh,
what? Come over here if you need help with something. Sorry. Child interlude. No, I can't get up. You
just
get up.
Just lock him in a room with Netflix like I did.
Just come here, bud. What's wrong? You're done with this?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, see? There you go. All good. Criminy. That's what you get. So yeah, there's these little vignettes in between where you go to pick up the different death balls. Within each stage, there's like collectible coins, and you get the score you get adds up, or it's the money you get adds up, so that you can buy additional T-shirts and T-shirts. I think it's just T-shirts that you put on Travis. Though one of the fun things is like the T-shirts are mainly shirts of other indie games, like pretty much any indie game that came out, like any popular indie game, I guess, that came out in like the last 5-6 years, there's a shirt for.
That's cool.
It is cool. So, you know, like Rogue Legacy's in there and Hollow Knight, Hotline Miami, Travis is playing when Batman shows up at his house. Like, he's just playing that game. So that's a cool thing. What now, bud? You opened up the same exact thing. You did the same thing. You did not. Maybe you should pick. Maybe. Yeah. Oh, God. Okay. There you go. Thank you. yeah. So the cool thing about this game is what sells me on it is kind of the gameplay of the No More Heroes series has never really been its highlight. Like, it's always been fine. And the gameplay in this is fine. It's not like the most exceptional, interesting, amazing kind of action you're going to run into, but the situations it puts you into are satisfyingly weird. The characters you encounter are satisfyingly weird. The places the main story goes are really freaking weird. And that's what I'm here for with a No More Heroes game, is the weirdness.
Yeah.
And in this game, I was happy, kind of brought back that pseudo weirdness in like a big way. Like ever since Killer 7, I've kind of been chasing the high of pseudo weird. So I'm always kind of bummed out when a game doesn't hit that for me, but this game hits that. And that's cool. And I like that. It is called the Complete Edition because it includes the DLCs, which if you bought a physical copy of the game on Switch, you had those DLCs packed in with it anyways, for $40. So it's not like it's really doing you a deal here. Like the game was $40 with the DLC anyways. So,
But now the it's DLC, $40 with the DLC.
Yeah, but yeah, and it was $40 with the DLC on Switch, so it's not like it's not really anything different than it was. So, like, it's kind of like a sly bit of like, oh, we're bundling it up, we're helping you out. What's going
Less
on?
Downloading.
Bud? What do you keep getting yourself into? You got to watch where you're clicking. Good gravy, man. I know what I'm going to do next. So, the DLC chapters are based around, There's a bad man storyline that focuses just on him, and there's one the other one is based around Shinobu, which is a character from No More Heroes 1 and 2, a popular character that No More Heroes fans will recognize from those two games. So yeah, it has all that value packed into the $40 package, and it's a good weird game. I think like the drawback, aside from the gameplay not being like hot fire, there's a certain amount of people that aren't going to be into what this game is selling, like the weirdness or the gameplay. Like if they're very gameplay focused and they don't care about story, like they're not gonna like this game. But if you're looking to try something, weird, then this would be a game to check out. And if you're a No More Heroes fan already and you didn't have a Switch, like, man, you need to buy this game and check it out. The Switch owners did the dirty work of spending our money to buy the game, which got them to get No More Heroes 3 going. So we've already done our service.
Yeah. Yeah. So overall, $40 on this one, your official verdict.
Yeah, it's good. It's a buy, definitely, I think. Like, there's some people that it is maybe at best a try for because of all that weirdness. But I think, like, you know, if you are a pseudo fan, if you're looking for something a little more bizarre, then this is well worth checking out.
Awesome. And maybe one day Marvelous and XSEED will show some love to Xbox and bring it over there as well. Fingers crossed.
Wah, 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 wah.
I know. Come on, Marvelous and XSEED, give us some love.
Marvelous.
Anyway, next game to talk about is called Out Buddies, developed by Julian Laufer, published by Head Up, released October 15th on Steam for $17.99. Run, gun, and explore an open undercity in this otherworldly, nonlinear Metroidvania about the old gods, strange creatures, and the remnants of a lost world. Tim, tell us about Out Buddies.
You are Ocean Man. Cast to the bottom of the ocean to solve some ocean problem. I don't know. Just like some characters you run into refer to your guy as Ocean Man, and I think that's a delightful name for him. This game is pretty cool. Like, if you take a look at it, it has a, like, the aesthetic of it is not, it's a bit more than 8-bit, but not quite 16-bit with its pixel art graphics. They're like, there's something that's just kind of like a little grimy about it, and like the whole game in general, like in a good way though, like there's something about this game in general that just really appeals to me. As it feels like, you know, most Metroidvania games I play nowadays are very shiny and polished, and this game like is a bit more dark and rough, just in general. Oh my gosh, stop popping up this notification until after this podcast. Computer is so pissed at me right now.
Things are just so going great for you today.
It's like just like the last hour is just like bananas. So yeah, you're this deep sea diver guy who is down in this area at the bottom of the ocean, near as I can tell, below the ocean floor, perhaps. And you are exploring, you know, a Metroidvania type 2D world. And kind of the gimmick, your buddy, your titular buddy, is this drone that follows around with you. And your drone can use telekinesis to move objects around. It can scan the environment for information. If you remember, you know, the Metroid analog is the Samus's scanner in those games, where you could see like, oh, this is bombable over here, or oh, I need to use a missile on this block, that sort of thing. But it, you know, just lets you sweep over the environment, kind of analyze things and see where you can get through. And then there's also a glitching ability that it has, where there's certain enemies that you can glitch them and turn them into like platforms, or sometimes they just die because they can't handle it. But just kind of has some weird, interesting interactions with the world around you. But your main dude, you know, you pick up abilities that you might recognize from a Metroid game, such as missiles or a charge shot or bombs. You get the ability to, you can't like turn into a ball and roll, but you can do a somersault forward. You can crawl to get through, like, say, waist high spaces and move around in tight areas. Stuff like that.
So familiar abilities.
But familiar abilities. But and you have a wall jump from the beginning. Like, it's just kind of like it feels very much like the Super Metroid wall jump. Maybe a little bit more responsive. I was never that good at that wall jump, I felt like. So most of the variety comes from, like, or the variance, I guess, comes from what you can do with your little drone buddy. But it's a cool game to explore. Like, it just has a really good vibe to it. I think, like, the whole underwater setting, like, there's like a darkness to the game. I guess when you look at it, like, it's all on kind of like a, it's hard. It just has really good atmosphere. Like when you're going through dark, like tighter tunnels, or where you're swimming around in darker spaces, like the you don't see the whole screen. Like it'll zoom in on your character, just to make you feel like a little bit more claustrophobic.
Nice.
Yeah, it's cool. see, but it was thinking, like, while I was playing, it was like something I just couldn't quite put my finger on. Like, why does this game feel so like neat and cool? I guess it's the most I've had a game feel like original Metroid, more so than Super Metroid, which is what most games kind of, you know, go for. So there's that roughness to it, but it's a cool world to explore. There's enemies to shoot. Go figure. There is a little town of characters that you will get to eventually. That give you the Ocean Man name. But you know, it struck me, like, while I was playing, just like the map in this game is huge. They kind of show you like a rough layout of the whole world, like right from the start. And I was just sweeping around this map, and it was just like, holy crap.
Yeah, I remember watching you stream it, and you just kept scrolling and scrolling and scrolling and scrolling. Yeah.
Like, it's slightly deceptive, because, like, the way the map, before you explore an area, like, it just represents rooms as, like, these white rectangles. But say, like, four or five or six rectangles that are bunched together, that could be one large room. Those aren't individual rooms. That's just kind of the space it takes up in that quadrant of the map. I will say, like, a few of my beefs with the game, the save points are kind of sparse, and they're important. Like, the game checkpoints, the game is very fair with its checkpoints. When you die, you don't lose a ton of progress, but those checkpoints are not saves. like, if you leave the game, or say your game crashes, and you boot it back up, it takes you back to the previous save point, which really threw me off. Like, when I was streaming that night, the game, my whole computer crashed at the end of it. And when I loaded back in, I was back at my previous save point, not at my checkpoint. which is not how games usually operate these days, and is something to be aware of.
Yeah.
It's a little deceptive in that, and those save points, they're a bit spread out and not always the easiest thing to spot, if I'm being completely honest. That they once I kind of say it shows you where they are on the map, but they are not, there isn't like discrete save rooms. They'll just kind of be like on a cliff somewhere in a larger room. You know, it's easy to get to, but you got to think about it. Some of the tutorials and explanations in this game are a bit lacking or confusing. Like, they put these little panels, these drawings and animations on the wall that are meant to express how an ability might work or how you are to use an ability. And sometimes that's clear, but like the way the telekinesis works, I didn't feel was very intuitive. I kind of took me a second to fiddle with it and get a feel for it. The little glitch ability, I still kind of don't completely understand. But I have gotten a bit better at it. But just sometimes it's, I just need text to tell me. And sometimes there wasn't always text, which was like a little bit frustrating. And I do feel like the kind of the tile sets and the enemies can get end up being a little bit overused. I think just with kind of the scale of the map that the particular biomes might be a bit too big or a bit too samey. It's not like, I think it would be difficult for you to just quickly like look at a screenshot of a room in an area and be like, oh, it's that room. It's connected to that room, and that room. I know that off the top of my head. Whereas rooms in, say, something like Super Metroid are very distinct unto themselves. And like, usually I can look at a room in that game still to this day and be like, oh, okay, I know it's in this general vicinity. This, I was like, they didn't always stand out as much from each other, even though their construction might be rather different. But overall, like, I just found the game, like, the music, too, really adds to that atmosphere and ambiance that the game is trying to set. Like, overall, I just, like, there's something, despite it being kind of a little bit rough, like, even the feel of your character, like, moving, jumping, and sometimes shooting just felt like a little bit rough, just like a little bit janky, just not quite as tight as it maybe should or could be. But I kind of felt like all of that added to the game a little bit and just made it, I don't know, just stand out.
Rustic charm.
Yeah, it definitely gave the game a bit of like a rustic charm, which in a lot of cases I feel like it'd be like, oh man, this game just feels old. But it does feel old, but in a good way. It is hard to put into words. It's not just nostalgia, but it offers like a cool old feeling experience that you just don't really see. I mean, there's tons of retro games, but I don't think they always like hit that like mood, I guess, is what it is. It's all about kind of the mood that this game manages to hit more than just its graphical style.
Yeah. Well, overall, $18 on it. What do you think?
Buy it. Yeah, that's a buy. It's another buy. Yeah, I think it's well worth checking out in kind of the sea of Metroidvanias that exist out there these days. I think this is one to check out and keep an eye on.
Awesome. And hopefully, I know Head Up brings a lot of their games to console as well, so hopefully this shows up on consoles in the future.
I'm sure it will. Just got to get it out there on PC first, and then you start working it for other systems.
Indeed.
Indeed! Oh, and this, we will have some video up on the YouTube of from my first, my only live stream of this game, which was my first play session of this game. Kind of my first hour with the game, checking it out. And that'll be up on the YouTube.
Yeah, that'll be there coming days. Eventually, it'll be
pretty
there.
Soon. Yeah, I was doing some editing last night, so it should be shortly after this podcast goes up.
Awesome. Well, Tim, thank you as always for coming on and doing your thing. Do you have any final words before we move on?
No, I gotta go do stuff with this kid. What are you doing? Oh my gosh, he's got the camera on this tablet. What in the world is he doing? Oh boy. All right, yeah, you guys have a good one.
All right, and finally tonight we are bringing in our good friend Pernell Vaughn. Pernell, how are you doing?
I'm doing all right. It's nice. Well, I guess I'm not sure when the episode hits, but I know when it hits, but I don't know when it hits. Anyway, it's Friday, and it feels good. And I have
Fernell, you're giving it away. We don't record this shit on Friday. We do it Thursday night.
It's Thursday night.
It is Thursday night, and you are on the show with us, and I'm tired as balls because I haven't slept in 4 days.
Oh, wait. We could say that it's after midnight, so it is Friday.
Oh, okay. Well, then there we are. I guess it is.
Yeah, it's just been a long episode.
Yeah, it just feels like it was like 12 hours ago.
1 a.m. Indian food. It's way
live on
it
Twitch.
It doesn't matter what food it is. It immediately tastes better at 1 a.m.
Honestly, I feel like everything tastes better at 1 a.m. If you're eating at that hour, you want it, which means the desire to consume is going to enhance the flavors of whatever cuisine you have on deck, whether it's a delectable chicken vindaloo or not so kosher lean cuisine. Everything works at 1 a.m. Everything tastes good, except for things that aren't actual food. So anyone listening going, what about counters? Who the hell is a counter ever? Don't say that. All right. I'm talking about actual edible foods.
In some places, they use cow patties as like a heat source to cook their food on. So, but I mean, like, think about it. If you flavor your food by like putting it in a smoker with some hickory chips, what's different between putting it in there with a cow patty and getting it hot and all nasty?
You know,
it has to like affect it.
Well, for one, hickory, I mean, it is still wood chips. And while I'm not going to go around eating wood, I can outright acknowledge that burning wood smells good.
It does.
And it provides an enhancement to flavor. I don't think
burning cow shit
smells good. Yeah,
that's exactly it, though. Like, I mean, you know it would have to – I can't get any ink on my brush. There we go. you would have to know that it would, like, negatively affect the flavor to some extent or another.
Which is
but
why
people still do it.
Well, hey, if you're in a situation where the best source of you got is cow shit, you've probably forced yourself to adjust to the horror so that it doesn't bother you so much anymore.
I'm going to guess that if you're cooking with cow shit, that the food on the grill is probably like squirrel to begin with.
Hey, wait. You can't be knocking squirrel.
Oh, we can if it's cooking in cow shit.
I mean, if you're cooking in cow shit, sure. But normal cooked squirrel, that's fine. It's good.
I have relatives from the South, and they've told me all sorts of stories of like what they used to eat. They talk about eating squirrel, whether it was fresh or off the road. I mean, they were in addition to being from that, they were also broke, hence the from the road part. But I mean, they told me a number of stories, and I can outright acknowledge I'm old enough and open enough to accept that I would wager that pretty much generally any mammal can be cooked and prepared and eaten normally. And the thing that prevents anyone from doing certain animals in that regard is personal hubris and taste. Like, I don't want squirrel, but I can accept that the day came where I had to eat squirrel, I can handle it, and it probably could be done well. You know, people have to eat snail at some point. Do you ever see a snail on the ground and go, you know, it'd be real tasty, a damn snail. Someone had to do it. Someone had to be the pioneer to go beyond the walls and say, people, I bring you slimy bait. And then you eat it. And you go, you know, he's onto something. What did you do with this? I coated
it
in spices.
Looks good enough.
Exactly. But that's how it is when it comes
hashtag
to like food.
YOLO.
Yeah, but like if I have a choice in the matter, if I have the option to choose my food, snail ain't going to be on that plate. Squirrel ain't going to be on that plate because I've got options. And sure as hell ain't going to be no damn cow pies on anything. Eating it, cooking with it, enhancing it, nothing. I want no cow poop. What about manure? Hey, it grows in the manure. And then we clean the shit out of it, literally and figuratively. It's just how it goes. You know, then we cook and eat it. Shit free since 93.
God damn. And
so
you
this
wonder,
went off the deep end.
And you wonder why I get concerned about tangents with you two.
She did it.
We kind of feed each other, don't we?
It's a very big problem. Pooping with cows or cooking with poop that comes from cows. Why, Cole? Why? I don't know.
I mean, I'm just A walking encyclopedia of shit nobody wants to know.
That's booking with shit. Man, I tell you. This is like
that review, though.
It's like, I thought
yeah, we're going to bring Purnell on for a review. How about we talk about cooking with cow shit? What the fuck?
I blame Cole!
That's sexist.
Oh, Lord. No, that's Colesist. Oh, geez.
Anyway,
also true.
Anyway, are you ready to get to your review?
Yeah.
Because the final game to talk about tonight is called Driven Out, developed and published by No Pest Productions, released October 18th on Xbox One, PS4, and Steam for $14.99. Beautiful 16-bit retro art style with fluid animations and deliberate combat. Read the enemy and act accordingly in this seamless world without any load screens. Purnell, tell us about Driven Out.
I think the thing that's funniest about this is that this review is probably going to be shorter than the previous conversation. Not because it's a bad game by any means, but simply because this game took what it wanted and made it exclusively about that, which means the game can be boiled down into some very short words, very few words. You are a farmer who gets a device and a sword somehow. And as a result, ends up in this scenario where she now has to fight all sorts of things, be they human or beast. Why? But is it enjoyable? That depends on your definition of enjoyment, because this game will make you hate yourself for periods of time. And then eventually, after perseverance, you will feel a slight hit of euphoria. As you realize you've overcome rough odds and then go over three screens and all of a sudden the odds are not in your favor once again. So as you are the character that you're playing, as you have a sword and you have this magical device, the purpose of the sword is to fight enemies in a 2D side-scrolling environment. Your character kind of inches forward when you walk normally, or you can hold down the left bumper and you'll run. But it's not like a fluid run. So you have to actually heft your sword up, put it over your shoulder, and start running. And the reason behind that, I presume, is because they wanted to keep you from having speedy motions to dodge enemies. You're only going to be running to just cover ground quickly.
Yeah.
So as you're inching left or right, because you can go either direction, you will eventually come across an enemy. Each enemy in the game has a number of different attack patterns, of which they own solely for themselves. It's not shared with others. And those attack patterns are all based heavily on visual cues. You might see an enemy who's carrying his Y-hander, which is a giant sword that's two-handed. And the idea behind it is you might see him kind of lurch back. And if you can tell he's lurching back with his head hanging low, you know he's going to do an overhead swing. So you can hold down the right trigger and press the Y button to guard upwards, guard against upward attacks. Or you can choose to, he might still go like lunge, like bring his arm back, but stand up straight, implying he's going to do a side strike. Hold down the right trigger and hit the X button to guard from your front. And then there's another attack fluid mission for like the low swing, so you do the block low. So you're going to be trying to guard against attacks as enemies deliver them, and also try to counter with attacks of your own to bring the pain evenfold back to them. Now, you're going to fail. You're going to fail a lot because you only get three health items or three hit points. You don't get it back. If you do, I never noticed because I was too busy dying all the time. I just killed dudes and died again. But you basically will be dying. And what happens when you die is one of two things. Either one, you will start right back at the beginning of the area you were in, or B, you've placed one of those magic devices down, which works as sort of like a checkpoint that creates a digital image of yourself. So that when you die, the magic device pretty much 3D prints another version of you and you come out and you start fighting again. So if that happens, you might just see yourself get printed and thrown right back out in the field and continue where you left off. Now, unfortunately, sometimes enemies notice that this can exist, that this thing happens, and it will destroy your checkpoint if you allow them to. But they'll just bypass you, go after your checkpoint and smash it, which means that you won't have the ability to do that anymore. You'll be dying and going back to the last boss you beat or the beginning of the game, depending on which is in your situation. So now I have had moments where I couldn't quite tell whether or not the game was going to make me, you know, restart from the checkpoint or if it was going to 3D print me from the checkpoint. And I wager that maybe what it is that you can get 3D print it one time and then after that it's just an outright, you know, restart from checkpoint. And that's probably due to keeping you from just having battles of attrition where you fight a guy, take off 2 hit points, he kills you, you reprint up, and you take off another 2 and ad nauseum until he's dead. So you're going to have to deal with figuring out patterns and going for the long haul to win pretty much every battle in this game. Do you get any upgrades? No. Do you get any better weaponry? No. Do you get superpowers? No. And that's why in some odd way I kind of have myself thinking, like, is this tougher than, like, say, Dark Souls? Because, and the reason why you're talking, like, why are you talking about Dark Souls? And the reason being is because, one, aside from the obvious being that it's a difficult game, the other part is that a large part of what makes Dark Souls and Demon Souls such a challenging game in the first place is that a lot of what you do comes down to reading the bosses, encountering, or rushing them accordingly. That's the metric of the game. Which is why when people make that jerk statement of get good, the friendly way to phrase it is you have to ultimately learn enemy patterns and learn how to counter them. But in Dark Souls, in those games, they also give you different things you can work on to make the kind of shift the odds. You can get yourself more hit points or better spells. You can fight from a distance or dodge and circle around, whatever. In this game, you don't have that. You literally have blocks and swings. You do not have maneuverability to dodge roll anything. You're not getting out of the way of any attacks for the most part. So your sole focus is reading enemies, blocking, striking, wash, rinse, repeat, and learning from your mistakes. And that is what I meant when I said that the difficulty in this or the enjoyment level of this depends solely on the player. Because if you need a game to constantly reward and praise you, you're not getting that here. Nah. If you need a game that is going to, I don't know, kind of ease you in and give you an idea, there's a slight bit of ease on like the first 2 enemies, in which case, like, you can hit them well enough, they'll get knocked backwards. But after that, not even any ease. You just get it right. Figure it out. But if you're okay with not getting, you know, constant, you know, reward stimulation and have it so that your reward is simply saying, I beat the crap out of that thing. I'm moving forward. Why is there a bird standing there? And why is it stronger than the life, the freaking werewolf I just fought? If you're okay with that, then I think there's much love in this game for you because it really is a game that's meant to set up challenge after challenge, changing nothing about you, but changing everything about your opponent and making you go figure this out. And it works. I was playing it right before the episode started. I was honestly enjoying it, but my feeling of enjoyment feels weird here because, again, due to the lack of, you know, physical reward, you know, item and ability-based rewards, my enjoyment comes from saying, fuck you, monster! Go! I killed it! Sometimes stay there! That's enough. Exactly. And in this case, I wholeheartedly agree for this game because that's the feeling I get. And it's also nice to see an enemy and you're like, how am I supposed to get a strike in? Because again, you're just a farmer. You have no abilities. And you're fighting freaking giant werewolves and freaking magical creatures on horseback and mess. And they're doing all kinds of stuff. And you're like, how do I get an opening to do some damage with this slow swinging sword? Because she's not even good with it. She's terrible with this thing. She's swinging it like she just got out of the gym and someone handed her like a freaking 2x4 and said, here, just start wielding this thing. Here's a sledgehammer or whatever. Like, she's terrible with this weapon. She is the worst swordswoman I've ever seen, which is understandable because she was a farmer up till 5 minutes ago. But I digress.
Can't confirm that farming doesn't lend itself to much swordplay.
Right, exactly. Like, yeah, I mean, if you're out tilling the field, I mean, swinging a hoe is one thing, but you ain't gonna be
unless you're still using a scythe.
That is true, but then again, you're not gonna be deflecting damage with a scythe either. You're just gonna be like swing, swing.
You can deflect damage with a scythe. That's the reason Reapers use them.
To deflect damage?
No, to do damage. You don't have to deflect it because you're doing it all.
I was about to say, like, I've never seen the Grim Reaper deflect anything. He just shows up and touches you, and you're dead.
Exactly.
That's his gimmick. That's his shtick. And he's holding on to it. The
farmer's shtick.
If the farmer's shtick was killing things, I think we'd be all in a bit of trouble. Like, here's this year's crop. Dead. Good luck selling it.
How do you think he turned a pig into bacon?
Well, That's the butcher.
No.
The farmer.
That is not the farmer kills those motherfuckers.
I'm thinking about slaughterhouses, which sucks because farmers are nicer to their animals. But the point is, you cook meat, you don't kill vegetables. You're not supposed to kill your vegetables. Dead vegetables don't turn profit, and they don't feed families.
How did we get to this?
Cole's fault.
Purnell, $15 on Driven Out. What do you think?
I think, honestly, I want to give it a try. I would say buy it, except for the fact that this game is totally hinges on your level of pain tolerance. Yeah. If you have a high tolerance for pain, get on board. If you do not, I'm not even going to tell you to buy it. I'm not even going to suggest it. Just go somewhere else. Because this game is all about taking on heavy challenges, learning from them, surmounting them, and taking another challenge as a reward.
Awesome. Sounds good.
But not Thank vegetables.
You, not, you don't kill vegetables. Vegetables are meant to be living until eaten.
Oh, my God, you too. That is it for this episode, Purnell. Thanks, as always, for coming on and chatting with us. It's been another fun one. It's been a long one, but another fun one. So
I concur. I didn't expect to come on and discuss Grim Reaper battle tactics, and yet here we are.
Here we are indeed.
I think we found the episode title.
Grim Reaper battle tactics. Oh my. That's the magic stuff right there.
Oh, my Lord. Music this episode is some friends put out a Castlevania tribute album to celebrate Halloween. Syndravania organized it. Our friend Brenna Wilkes, she organized it. And a bunch of our friends are on the project, including, Darmok from Steel Samurai. Alexander Brandon's on there. Sixto Sounds is on there. Stemage, Viking Guitar, Mega Beardo, Snapple Man.
I like so many of those people.
Norg is on there, the voice of SML.
What?
Cave Tactics. He's the boss of cave culture.
Yeah. Yes. So we're gonna be playing some songs off of there. And that's probably going to be our music for the next few episodes.
It's a good selection. And I can tell you right now, based off of last year's alone, I'm wondering what Darmok put on there this time, because last year her track killed it.
They always kill it. Everyone kills it on these projects.
They really friggin' do. And that's why I'm glad that they keep putting them out.
And it's on Bandcamp now for $5. So go do it.
Mm-hmm. Go and do you it. Get a preview of it right now.